It's just chaos.
Oh, it is, but it's really choppy, so it might not be coming out very well for Widge right now. He might be very upset. I have heard this. TikTok. What? I have heard this. TikTok. What does that mean?
I'd heard the Rock Candy or whatever band, and then I was I sent TikTok to want to wrap this up so that we can get into the next podcast.
Oh, you're saying, yeah. You're yelling at me, essentially, is what you're saying.
In a nice way. And fail. Only the way that I can.
John, yes. I downloaded a free file converter.
Right.
Because we were saying before, we've got like, you know, 2 days worth of footage.
Right.
At least. And I took one of the 11-minute FunFest files to convert. It's 20 minutes to convert that. And even then, the 11-minute file like nearly crashed my computer twice trying to do anything with it at all. So I don't know if it's just because I use a free program or if it's the case that this is the road that I'm going to have to go down for the next while. So
carry a laser down the road that you must follow.
No, don't do that.
Oh, God, are we back here again?
No, we can do some more of this.
Okay, wait, John?
Yes?
Hey, John, before we do that, I really need to do this. Okay.
Okay, well, this isn't as bad.
I believe that Widge would refer to that as rock, R-A-W-K.
You know, it's borderline rock. To me, it's kind of hard to touch Queen. To me, R-A-W-K means, like, it's so rocking that it's almost easy to mock. You know, like serious hair metal is easy to mock. But
like the beginning of that, which was Motley Crue.
And mock as an M-A-W-K.
Exactly. Mock.
Being mawkish.
As you have a faux hawk. as we were discussing in the previous podcast that we just recorded like 2 seconds before this one, that's actually Rock Sugar. Have you heard of them?
Rock Sugar?
Mm-hmm.
I'm all sugary.
No, but is that kind of like rock candy?
They're
are they from Big Rock Candy Mountain?
They do metal mashups, basically. And
wow, okay.
But their lead singer is also Wacko.
The voice of Wacko from
Really? Oh, that's cool.
Oh,
he's
wow.
He's not doing anything lately.
Now when you say metal mashups, what I think of is Big Mike and Tongo Heedy at Trader Vic's in Atlanta.
Oh, yeah.
That's how we got down this road in the previous...
Okay, the road that we must travel? I'm like, yes. Oh, we're back again!
Escape your destiny.
We were talking about Thursday.
Why don't we do it in the road?
It's the long and winding road.
Because you get pebbles in your ass. That's why you don't do it in the road.
Whoa, easy with the Flintstones references.
Here we go.
Brown chicken, brown cat.
That's insane. Is that the sort of thing they do? Is what? And for assuming this makes it to the podcast,
right.
Tongo Heedy does an amazing Metallica infused Celine Dion theme from Titanic.
That's exactly the one we were talking about.
No, I mean that
it's
is
like you're living in our mind.
He literally played it.
No, I mean, it is in the script. But the whole point is, when you go to see this, generally half the audience has never been there before, and half the fun is watching people's faces as Big Mike goes from singing "My Heart Will Go On" very earnestly, very straightforwardly, to doing it like Metallica. Lah! I mean, just people just flip the fuck out because they've, I mean, that's half the fun. Because you might go, oh, that might be funny the first time. No, it's funny every goddamn time.
It's one of those moments where you kind of, you're looking at the crowd more than you're looking at the band.
Well, yeah, because you can hear the band and you know what Big Mike's going to do because you've seen it. But yeah, and eventually, because like there's there's like, and the one thing that you do want to watch for is that every once in a while, there's like a, I think it's like a canoe or something that's hanging down over the little raised floor area. And every once in a while, he'll get very excited and smack it. And I when that happens, that is glorious. But yeah, for anyone who's listening to this, who's doing Dragon Con, or even comes to Atlanta at all, please try to see Tonko Hiti at Trader Vic's because they're amazing. And catch Big Mike while you can because he's constantly flying off now and doing opera.
Yeah, so. Actually, one of my biggest disappointments recently was that he was in Seattle doing a show at the same time that I was there, and I completely didn't know.
For a couple hours.
Well, I was there long enough. I was there a couple days. But and had Lee and I known, because Lee was there with me as well, we both would have definitely gone. So he was doing some avant-garde, you know.
Yeah, an opera. Yeah, he's doing. I think he's going to New York next, or some. He's back here for a time. They're doing their Elvis show, which I think is next month, August, and then.
Please tell me he's going to be there Thursday before Dragon Con, though.
Oh, he is? Okay, good.
So I have been told.
Tuffley arrives.
I mean, it's tradition, right, for him to be there.
Not to derail the conversation entirely, but I was just browsing Facebook, and I did not realize this at all. Chloe Moretz is in a Carrie remake being released next year with Julianne Moore playing the mom.
Oh, wow, really?
Whoa. Hang on. So she's playing Carrie?
Yeah, Chloe Moretz is playing Carrie. Hit Girl is going to be Carrie.
Is this a feature film remake, or is this a, because there was a television remake in the works at one point.
I'm trying to see if I can see who's the production team on it. It's because it's currently filming. It's on set in Canada. The rest of how I knew, because a friend of mine visited the set and saw Chloe today. I'm on IMDb on Pinewood Toronto Studios filming locations. MGM.
Huh.
Wow.
Well,
yeah, okay. I heard nothing of this until now.
What was it? I missed
it's
it.
Good
I,
thing it isn't Make the Bad Men Stop Now.
Someone fill me in because I actually had to take a call from a telemarketer and tell them to fuck off.
There's a remake of Carrie coming out next year. Chloe Moretz is playing Carrie and Julianne Moore is playing the mom.
Oh, why? Did anybody explain that while I was gone?
See, what you had to do is tell the telemarketer, listen, I got to go. Some Irish guy is talking about a Carrie remake.
Oh, you know what I do for telemarketers? I let them talk and stuff. And then I'll do like a couple things. Either I bang on the window and say, get out of my yard, and then just hang up. Or I bang on the window and go, oh my God, don't fall, and then hang up.
actually, John, was that a live telemarketer?
Yes, it was.
Not a recording?
Yes, it was.
Could you have patched them through to the call?
That would have been fantastic.
Outside in my house. There's two bats.
That would have been. If it ever happens again, I will see what I can do.
That would be great. So hi, you're live on the air, and there's six of us. So try to sell us whatever it is you're selling. That would be great.
They were selling. It's a stupid thing here in Florida. I don't know if anybody else is getting it, but they're doing these energy reviews. Has anybody else gotten these things?
Okay, you know what?
Because I told somebody I felt, you know, somebody was going to fall off the roof. So
I had my energy reviewed once, but it was by a tarot reader, and I really wasn't impressed.
Was that your energy, or was that your aura?
That was my aura energy.
I don't know how anybody can read that book.
What, the aura book?
No, tarot.
Tarot? Oh, you know, you make that shit up, really. You got 70.
No, nobody knows that comic book. Worst fucking joke ever, Aaron.
No, Aaron.
No, for a second, Aaron, I to be completely honest, I thought when we were saying aura that you might think we were saying R. So.
I'll be right back. Don't do anything while I'm gone.
All right.
Well, we certainly wouldn't ask for the soundboard to do a Price is Right fail horn after Aaron's joke or anything.
Okay, so apparently the director of the... Well played, soundboard.
Hi,
The director of the Carrie remake is Kimberly Pierce, who did Boys Don't Cry and Stop Loss. And the I recognize the screenwriter's name. Hang on a second. It is. Oh God.
Oh God.
Okay, guys, I don't want to get anyone concerned. But
yeah, concerned already.
But the person's name is Roberto. And I don't know how I know this name then. Roberto, I'm going to screw this up. Aguirre Sacasa.
And he, sure, is, why not?
He is best known for being a co-producer on Glee.
Wow. That means the new Carrie would be sort of like a Heathers, Jawbreaker, Pig's Blood in a Bucket type.
So after she kills the boyfriend, would she start into Voices Carrie?
Nice. Although, okay, what was it? Oh, shit. Is it? Oh, have you seen the trailer for, and if you have, I'm so sorry. One of the young ladies from Scott Pilgrim is in some sort of a cappella Glee Club movie called Pitch Perfect, if this starts playing in front of a movie that you're watching, that would be a good time to like
stop, go to drop, the bathroom. And roll.
Yeah, stop, drop, roll, go to the bathroom, buy some popcorn in the bathroom, or light yourself on fire. Actually, would be a if I say to you a cappella Glee Club girls movie, whatever it is that you're picturing is exactly what the trailer looks like.
Okay, so Anna Kendrick is the one from Scott Pilgrim who's in it. Thank now, you. Elizabeth Banks is also in it.
Now, which one's Elizabeth Banks?
She's the one who was in the Kevin Smith movie about pornos with...
Zach and Mira making...
Oh, sorry. I thought you meant from another one from Scott Pilgrim. I did. Okay. I actually never saw Zach and Mira make a boner.
Make a boner?
Make a boner, yes.
She was also in The Hunger Games. She played the announcer chick.
The girl.
I can't remember her name now. With the extreme makeup?
Yes.
Okay. Anyway, yes, sorry.
She was Christopher Mintz-Plasse is also in it. And a rather funny Australian comic named Rebel Wilson is in it. Now, for people who might recognize that name, Rebel Wilson was in Bridesmaids. She played a small enough role as the flatmate of the main character. And she had like a brother who was played by Matt Lucas. But she is, her character's name, nicely enough, is just called Fat Amy.
Wow.
Yeah. That will give you an idea of this film.
Yeah, well,
Heathers, man. It's Heathers.
I wish it was Heathers. Actually, that she seems to be the best part of the film because she says, she walks up to some sorority table and says, so we can put you down for this. So I'm paraphrasing. What's your name? And she says, Fat Amy. And says, you really call yourself Fat Amy? And she says something to the effect of, yeah, I go ahead and call myself that so that bitches like you won't do it behind my back.
Like that.
Yeah, no, she looks like she would be fun. It's just that the whole concept of, I don't know, it's just it really does look like a Glee spinoff movie. And since Glee doesn't work for me, then the movie doesn't work for me. I don't remember seeing.
Oh, I thought we were still talking about Carrie.
Glee doesn't work not because of the premise. It doesn't work because the writing is so bad. Well, Glee could be awesome if it was actually just written better.
No, I agree. And the thing that I say about both Glee and High School Musical, and I continue to say this, is that if it gets anybody interested in musical theater who wouldn't have been otherwise, then rock on. I mean, you know, I'm fine with that. And having I'm still convinced that Glee is simply for a High School Musical for adults who can't bring themselves to watch High School Musical. So, but whatever.
I sat through a High School Musical when I was in Paris. We were like stuck in a in Disneyland, not surprisingly, but obviously all the TV was in French apart from the one Disney channel. And so one night when it was like minus 20 outside, we decided just to sit in, and the High School Musical 2 was on, and dear fuck, How is that as popular as it was? I will never know.
Tweens.
But even like, even by tween standard, I mean, there's good tween television out there. That's not it, you know?
So Aaron, just so that our listeners know and myself, what would you term as good tween television? What is Aaron approved tween television? And I think... watched it, because now that I say that, it does sound creepy.
Well, you know, admittedly, he's not that far removed from it. So of all of us.
It's very true, both mentally and physically.
Thank you, Tuffley, for reminding me of that. Now I feel...
I watch it. I have to admit, one of my things when I had the channel, unfortunately, I don't have it anymore at the moment.
Oh, God.
But I had Nickelodeon for a long time. And
please don't say iCarly.
Well, Aaron, if it makes you feel any better right now, I don't either.
And Nickelodeon used to be very a staple daytime television thing to just, I would just leave on while I'm doing stuff online. There are some decent shows that they have. And in comparison, the Disney stuff is just really, really like putrid. Just some terrible, terrible things. Like the level and quality is palpably different. There's decent stuff out there. I mean, you know, there's still a lot of shit too, but there's a couple of decent shows out there.
Oh, you know what's a weird one is that Adventures in Time or Adventure Time.
I've never seen it. It's not shown over here.
Is that a
Cartoon Network? Yeah, that's Cartoon Network, actually.
Oh, it's not Adult Swim. Okay.
Some of it. It's not Adult Swim. You'd think it would be, because it's just like, it's almost like non sequiturs. And it's just, if you go to IO9, there's a really cool wrap up for Comic-Con, and they actually give an interview to the people that have created Adventure Time. So that's, and there's like a really cool mashup of like 8 minutes of the show with Princess Lumpy or whatever. So it's pretty cool.
Well, there's a particular moment. If you drive through downtown Atlanta, and you may notice this when you guys come for con, that they have actually the two lead characters from Adventure Time as inflatable things on top of the Turner buildings.
Oh,
which is kind of scary at first when you first look at them.
Plus, if someone told me there was going to be an inflatable thing on top of the Turner building, I would have thought it was something else.
Yeah.
And you would have wondered where Scott was.
Humping it.
Or maybe not. Maybe you wouldn't have wondered that at all. Maybe you would have just...
Well, I like the idea. They pitched that show saying, oh, it's a happy show. It's this, this, and this. But they didn't mention that it's set in a post-apocalyptic world. So you see little bits. Apparently, if you just watch it, you don't notice like the car way in the background that's on fire and stuff. So
Rocks, this sounds like a show that's after your own heart.
It is. It's a great show.
Because, you know, anytime I think of just a car nonchalantly burning in the background, I think of you, Rocks.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Welcome to my first Rage Against the Machine.
Rocks, every time I touch myself, wait a minute.
Wow.
You light a car on fire?
Yes.
Oh.
I think of Cars on Fire. The band, oddly enough. The band Cars on Fire is what I masturbate
to. Oh, it hurts.
Yes, it does. It burns.
It does. Well, you should get that looked at.
I did. Sorry. Go ahead, Widge. It is your podcast.
No. It is completely our podcast. I don't want full responsibility for this.
In court, I want someone else to blame.
But you remember, we went and we all filed for joint custody.
That's right.
I did promise Aaron that I had a bone to pick with him.
Wait. Who gets visitation rights for Scott?
You do.
I think nobody.
Oh, shit.
We'll be fighting over that, but we'll be fighting for the other person to get it.
It's your month to have Scott.
It's like musical chairs. The music ended and, oh, no, you got to
Because
go
you piped
that.
Up. You piped up. We would have all left it alone of who gets Scott, but all you right. had to go there.
Can we do a giveaway?
No.
We can't give Scott away. Remember the last time we did that?
Yeah,
no one would take
it. Yes, but the UK wasn't available to enter. We can do that now.
What is this, some sick version of Eurovision? What is this?
And also, don't talk about entering and Scott in the same sentence.
All right, so to be fair, Scott isn't here to poorly defend himself, so we should probably move on.
And you know, poorly defending himself would be correct.
That's okay.
Widge, he didn't read it anyway. Go ahead.
He won't listen to the podcast. John, what is this bone you have to pick with Aaron?
I need to bone Aaron real quick. Picking wise, that is. Hold on. I need to have another sip of whiskey.
Another bone?
So Aaron needed some stuff sent to him. By the way, he's been nothing but thankful that I sent it to him, because he just does nothing but complain about how it's in the wrong format. However,
my fault, you're retarded.
Wait a minute, John,
did you send him something that's 110 volt and he needs it in 220 or something?
No.
Oh.
Well, no, I have actually gotten a converter for the plug. That's fine. I did that on my own Steam without complaining, but you know, we're gonna have pot shots
okay,
here.
Hold on a second. Now, first of all, I'm sending you stuff.
Yeah, because I'm doing work for you.
Hold on. Okay, so wait a minute. Aaron says it's only going to cost you $10 to send that over here.
No, well, 10 euros or 10... something like that.
Okay, wait a minute. 10 euros is basically $140. I mean, come on.
Okay, so let me set the stage. I had to send him a hard drive, and I also had to send him an external drive enclosure, which apparently is what he's complaining about that needs the adapter.
Now, can I say for the record, two things together weigh about as much as a fart, all right? And you're charged by the weight whenever you post something. So I will get to that. Light as fuck. I think John screwed himself in this scenario.
I will get to that.
I just like to point out that since we pointed out that Aaron is the youngest person on the podcast, I think I can speak with some authority that he can speak with some authority that he has weighed his own fart and can say that. So I'm sorry. Go on, John.
I will get.
And if not, someone's going to try that at Dragon Con.
please don't approach me to try and weigh my farts at Dragon Con. Thank you.
I will get to the weight thing in a second.
Okay.
So here I am thinking that, all right, it'll only cost me, Aaron swears it's only $10 to send anything to Europe.
I didn't swear. I say it's probably like $10. How's that swearing?
And when I said, Aaron, how do you think it's only $10? There's no way it only costs $10 to send to Europe. No, it does. I get the stuff sent to me all the time. It's $10. Obviously not never looking at the
poster. I would like to see evidence of where I said this, by the way.
I record everything, so
I said it wouldn't.
Of course,
cost
I don't.
Much.
I don't edit it or put it together in any format, so I'll never find it.
All right, give me the numbers. Lay it on me. How much it cost you?
Then that's we'll get to that because.
Oh, okay.
Because
how much would you expect to pay?
Because I went to the USPS, that's United States Postal Service store. There are still some in the United States.
The post office
on a Saturday. Went in there, and sure enough, right on the display there, it says, there's a sign that says, priority mail, ship anywhere in the world, and then it says, flat rate, it was like, for the medium-sized box, $12 or something like that.
But that's flat rate, as in flatten it. They completely flatten it with a hammer and put it in an
oven. $12, that's kind of similar to 10.
Hold on a second. Wait, we get to that. See, you're not completely to blame for this, but... So I read that and I was like, oh, sweet. Grabbed a box, brought it home, put the stuff in it, brought it back not the next day because it's closed on Sunday. Brought it back a few days later and said, here you go, sir. I even went to Walmart because I had already boxed it up. But then I saw it had to be in these other boxes, right? I said, okay, fine. I'll get that. I'll put it in there. I went to Walmart and bought some tape to tape because I'd run out of tape and taped it back up. Got some goodies for Aaron, stuck them in there, just randomly walking through. The Walmart and stuck them in there. We'll get to that in a minute. And I said, because it said up to 10 pounds. I said, there's no way this is anywhere near 10 pounds. Show up, wait in line for 45 minutes.
Must have been a good day at the postal service.
Yes, it was a good day. It wasn't 2 hours. I hand it to the guy. He's like, all right, great. I filled out the little customs form, which I lied on. I filled it out as much as
federal offense.
I mean,
it's okay. Nobody's listening.
Because I didn't know how much some of this stuff weighed. It asked for specific weights. I didn't weigh each thing individually. Hold on. Wait, there's someone calling me. Oh.
Is it another telemarketer? Because this could get awesome.
All right. You guys are going to have to converse amongst yourselves. I got to take another phone call.
Oh, shit.
So we will join this round at a later time.
Story for John. So he goes in to the postal service with the dildo all wrapped up and taped up into the box and everything. And he puts it on the counter, but it's buzzing because it's actually engaged, the fake penis. And they are not happy. That's how I think the story's going to end.
Why does it take – I mean, we have busy post offices. It doesn't take 45 minutes.
I think that is an exaggeration, Rox, and I think you have to remember that and keep that in mind next time he's telling the rest of the story, because I have a feeling a lot of this story is going to be filled with exaggerations when he tells us it cost him $4,000 to send this package.
You know, he could have saved some time if he had just weighed the package and done the online thing at home.
Yeah, he could have.
I don't know.
He could have done that, and the thing is he could have had it where he put the postage on the box, and his mailman could have picked it up. My mailman picks up stuff from me and my neighbors all the time. We just
But in fairness, they're dead bodies.
Well, Rox, I was thinking he could endure the sticker shock and the privacy of his own home.
Yes, true. Then he'd take it out on his family. and then record it all.
Hell, if we're lucky, he'll take it out on the soundboard.
It's true.
Oh God.
We're in a weird intermission phase now.
I know. Yeah. I don't know what to do. I was leaning back and relaxing and letting John do the heavy lifting, and that sounds sexual, but it's not. So
it wasn't even 10 pounds though, Widge. He said
Whoa. Hello.
Now can I get onto something? Because Tuffles is here.
Go. Go for it.
What is this? The airing of grievances?
So far, I've only seen the pilots. That is all I can speak to.
Oh, that's about all I've seen too, man. So we're on even keel about this.
And he knows exactly what we're getting into.
Yeah. What is it?
Newsroom.
Okay.
Have you seen The Witch?
No. No, because I would like to watch the first episode simply because I really like the cast. And the teaser looked very interesting. I mean, it's as many have pointed out, it's very network. But yeah. I mean, but I'm fine with that if the writing's good and the acting is good. I just haven't had a chance to watch it. I've been busy, you know, watching the first season of Rake, which is fucking fantastic. But I'll probably get around to it at some point.
By the way, that is for people listening. That is DirecTV later this month.
Oh, it's coming back.
Yeah.
Oh, excellent.
So, you know, if the Viacom channels haven't come back yet, you can go watch that.
No, go watch it anyway, because it's awesome. Anyway, I'm sorry. Aaron, so that's where I am with it. Please proceed.
Okay. Well,
I
have been on record as saying that I am an Aaron Sorkin junkie, and I will eat his stuff up with a spoon.
Yeah, and by that you do mean that sexually. I'd like to point that out because you have a boner for the guy. I mean, you do.
He is an ugly man, but if he dictates dialogue to me in a witty and sharp fashion while we're doing it, I'm gonna finish early.
Internet boy.
But so I absolutely love West Wing, as the majority of people with sense. I'm lovely. One of the few people who absolutely adored Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip. I know that gets mixed reviews. It got cancelled after a season, fair enough, but I don't understand why. I thought it was fantastic. And I have I loved the pilot. I absolutely adored it. I had dreams about the pilot afterwards that night. I enjoyed it that much. I couldn't get enough of it. So I'm befuddled and bemused at the general consensus from a lot of people online who go poof at the show, where I see no difference in the quality between this and West Wing. I see no difference in the ideals of the show either, because people keep moaning about like how, oh, it's all very preachy. Well, I mean, that's what the West Wing was all day long.
Oh, my gosh.
So,
well, yeah, but the difference is the West Wing were the people making the important decisions, and you kind of expect that. The newsroom.
Well, these guys are Gary, but you watched American News Networks. You know how preachy those fuckers are.
Oh yeah, because didn't he base this guy on Keith Olbermann? He said he hung out. He was on Terry Gross. So if you want to hear about Sorkin, go on to NPR and look for Fresh Air. There was a really cool interview with him yesterday with Terry Gross on how he came up with the whole walk and talk dialogue thing.
Yeah.
That was kind of cool because he actually did that for 30 Rock too, with Tina Fey. Anyway, he said he hung out with Keith Olbermann, who now doesn't have a job. I guess he hung out on like Countdown or something.
Well, I guess they made up because Sports Night, Olbermann was kind of pissed about, quote, how he was portrayed in Sports Night.
Yeah, I know, but I don't know how, because he's like a caricature anyway.
I know, yeah.
I mean, he's got good points, but to me, he's annoying. You know,
Olbermann? Yeah.
Yeah, he's annoying.
I liked him better when he didn't have an opinion and was on the sports show.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just me.
But he didn't want to move in. He liked it in Connecticut. Wasn't that the whole deal when he was on ESPN?
I think they weren't going to, well, actually they were reducing salaries. So it was about money.
Oh, well, he's also a lot of current TV too now. So
no, that was about, he suddenly recalled, oh, right. I'm on Current.
Yeah.
Maybe I should be on a network, people. Watch.
Right. We'll see if he goes on Fox News. That'll be funny. Yeah, we'll give you a show, Keith.
He's already worked for Fox Sports once. He did a stint on sports, so he's already burned that bridge.
Yeah, this is true. Maybe he'll be on PBS.
So anyway, getting back to what you were going to say about Newsroom, Aaron.
Well, yeah, I was just interested to see you say how you saw a dip in quality between, like, you know, it and Sports Night, and I personally don't see it, and I was wondering kind of where you were seeing the dip in quality.
Oh, I'm not saying I see a dip in quality, and this is where I kind of get to Sports Night, the reference, and I think Kim and I talked about this a lot, where Sports Night was basically, it only ran 22 minutes, so there was a focus and you couldn't pad things out, which is probably why I like that a lot better. West Wing, he was still kind of under the influence of that, so the scripts were really tight. The further he gets away from that format or the practice of working in that format, he's gotten, as he's learned to expand out for time, I guess, so to speak, it sort of goes on, if you understand what I mean.
I still feel like it's a fast-paced sort of show, though.
No, and here's the thing. I thought the part where the newsroom actually functions, where they're actually the bit where they're actually putting the show together and doing it, and kind of the stuff there, I thought, okay, there's your show. The only problem is the relationship, the interpersonal relationship stuff just falls flat for me.
I can kind of see where you're getting with that, but I think that was partially because in that pilot, they were trying to tease at everything. They weren't really giving us reasons why they were, you know, falling out and stuff like that, really. Like, it was only like fragments of details. So it was hard to get invested or care because you didn't really know much about it.
Yeah, but if you don't want to know any more about the interpersonal relationships, you're not going to watch episode 2.
Well, I mean, I would say on the strength of the show in as a whole, I definitely would have come back for episode 2, just based on, like you said, the good parts in the show. I didn't feel like the parts where I got bored with the interpersonal relationship stuff was, you know, 10% of the show, 20% of the show. Like, I would have thought that the vast majority of it would have made me come back.
And And here's the issue that I also have with the interpersonal relationship part. It's like, okay, so if you've watched a lot of Sorkin, you sort of start to pick up, okay, which show is this from? You know, and you should think like that.
But, yeah, I know what you mean. There's very much a vibe from Studio 60 with Matthew Perry. And what was the name of the girl that was his other in that show?
Oh, that
you remember?
Boss? Was that the network boss? That was...
Laura
Petty? No, not Laura Petty.
The blonde girl who was like the actress on the show that he had the ex relationship with.
Oh, the chick from the 700 Club.
Yeah.
Conservative Christian chick.
Yeah, so Matthew Perry and her character is pretty much the same as Jeff Daniels and the other girl. I'm forgetting names left, right, and center, but you know who I'm talking about.
Yeah.
It's that was pretty much the exact same dynamic straight off the bat. So I was like, I'm seeing where this is going. But yeah, I do get what you mean there.
You can pick out, you know, that, and then you can pick out the little thing with the intern and the old executive producer and the new associate producer. It's like, oh, it's Josh and Donna again, you know. So it's sort of like, okay, so it's not like, so it's that thing of, it's not only the relationship stuff isn't interesting, you've also seen it already. So it's sort of like, okay, I could do without the 30 minutes to get to the part I liked. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I can see where you're going with that. I would hope that would be some of that those problems would be shed as we go along. But yeah, I do get what you're saying there.
I mean, as long as we're sticking to the actual, you know, inner workings of the actual newsroom and people doing things within that framework, I think it works. But when you try to step out of the box and go interpersonal relationships, you just lose me. Like, I could, for all of the extra personal relationship stuff, you could have substituted that with more drunken Sam Waterston, because that was fucking awesome.
Oh yeah, Wiz, you'll see yourself in about 10 years time.
What, is it Sam Waterston?
Yeah.
Okay.
Basically, if you watch the first episode of The Newsroom, basically, yeah. It's Waterston. You have to give you the visual. Okay, it's Jack McCoy from Law and Order,
right?
Completely drunk for an entire hour. Go.
Okay, considering how much I like Sam Waterston, I don't know that I'm upset by this fate that you've cast upon.
No, I didn't say it was a bad thing. I was just saying, welcome to your future.
It's nice. Like, I think it was the best part of that show was can they keep Sam Waterston, like, can they keep his character drunk all the time? Because that was awesome.
I think they will. I mean, it was very strongly alluded to that he is a fully fledged alcoholic, and it's not just like he was having a very drunk day. So I think that's what we're going to have to get used to.
Also, can you say drunken Sam Waterston sounds like something the Raza really needs to make a film out of? Seriously, sounds like a kung fu flick.
It sounds like a fighting style, I feel more so. But yeah.
Oh, drunken Waterston.
Yeah. So what are you learning? I'm a master of drunken Waterston.
You must flow like Waterston. Oh, it never stays still.
Oh, God.
Really bad Bruce Lee reference. I apologize.
That's all right. But yeah, that was my thought about the newsroom. It's and again, you get that off one episode, which is the free. And to be honest, HBO, it wouldn't hurt them to, like, throw, you know, it's been a couple of weeks, so throw a couple more episodes out, because you guys need the viewers. The thing that gets me is they already renewed it for a second season, and it's like the exact same thing that, like, Studio 60 did, where the numbers just keep dropping.
But the thing is that with Studio 60 was when they looked back and looked at the TiVo recordings, it was one of the highest watched shows on TV. Because people were just TiVoing it all the time.
Yeah.
Well, now, Tuffley, let me ask you, surely we're to the point now where people are actually aware of TiVo and incorporating that into their numbers, right? I mean, haven't we made that transition?
Well, I think here's HBO. About HBO has done in their ratings, when they release their ratings numbers, they don't include HBO Go in that total. They're really weird about including DVR. I'm not sure if they have at this point, but I know they're not including HBO Go.
Weird.
Which is weird. But then again, you know, if you're paying customers, that's what they're looking at. HBO's, I think, guide is it's not so much ratings. It's how many subscribers the show is ultimately bringing to the table. You know what I mean?
True.
So that's why HBO can give shows 2 years pretty early on, because they can't gauge where if the subscribers are coming in until you've got to do that second season. You know what I mean? So they don't have those numbers until they can pin that down, which is why everybody was still a little on the fence about them bringing games. Early on, they were really on the fence about bringing Game of Thrones back for a third year, until a couple episodes into the second series, and they went and they saw ratings, and then the decision was made, okay, we're going to bring this back.
So here's the thing from Wikipedia, which we know is always right, on the DVR ratings. On December 29, 2006, Nielsen Media Research reported the results of having, for the first time, monitor viewers who use a DVR to pre-record shows for later viewing. According to the Nielsen numbers, adding these viewers increased Studio 60's ratings the most in percentage terms of all network shows. These ratings, called Live Plus 7, include all viewers who use a DVR to record the show and then watch it within a week of its initial airing. According to Nielsen, Studio 60 adds nearly 11% or almost a million viewers to its total every week as a result of these Live Plus 7 viewers. The Live Plus 7 day rating for NBC Studio 60 subscription is 136% higher than its live rating in DVR homes. So, I mean, there was viewers there. They just weren't watching it when it was broadcast. They were watching it, like, you know, within that week, like the next day or something like that. So it does show how flawed some of those rating systems are.
Oh, no. And I'm not saying rating systems aren't flawed, because there are a lot of really good shows that, you know, on paper, you're not seeing where the people are watching, but you have statistics like, you know, people are illegally downloading your show. You know, that sort of thing.
So, yeah, although I mean, it's funny because just recently, The Walking Dead 100 got released. Because the other way, everyone was always saying, oh, like, you know, illegal downloads is killing the comic book industry. Walking Dead 100 is the highest selling comic book since 1997.
You know what? Well, okay, so there's a television show, and it's the 100th issue and everything. But I gotta say, really, 15 covers, folks.
Well, the thing is if you go to the PBS channel or the website, you can actually they'll actually pop up a screen and say, "Do you want to know what is playing?" You know, that they'll find out what affiliate you would like to be hooked up into. And I think PBS takes into account if you're going to watch some of their shows online, because you can, because I'm watching Inspector Lewis. You know, that's in its fifth season now.
And the thing with Walking Dead 100, Aaron, I'd be a lot more impressed by that number if they had just done the one cover. Never know.
Weren't they going to release that as like a hardcover? Did they release it as a hardcover?
I think you could get like a box set of like a bunch of different covers together as one.
Jeez. It's like, oh, hey, we're 1990s.
Yeah, X-Men number one.
Ooh, Walking Dead, the chromo cover. The holographic.
I think there actually was a chromium cover for this, wasn't there?
I think so.
Quite possibly. It was possibly one of them. Actually, let me see if I can look that one up, because I'd love to see all the different types.
Speaking of which, who saw the 4-minute trailer for Walking Dead?
It was a 4-minute, wasn't it?
Yeah,
it
something like that.
Yeah.
It was pretty sweet, I have to say.
It was good.
The new showrunner, I think, really gets it.
Yeah.
Well, what's going to be fascinating, I think, is how they very obviously from the trailer changed up how the prison sequence is going to take place. because it doesn't, it's very, it doesn't go down like it does in the comics, which is both sort of terrifying and yet comforting at the same time, because as I have stated on many occasions, how it goes down in the comics is freaking heinous. Yeah. And, you know, I would like for something else to happen, quite frankly. So I'm going to be fascinated to see how they work this. The one thing that I am interested in is seeing how quickly in the season her, because I thought the season three takes place pretty much after season two is what I would assume, seeing as how at the end of season two, we saw the prison in the distance. And unless they're going to spend 3 weeks wandering around in a circle, they're going to see the prison and come up with their idea. So I'm only concerned as to Herschel, how quick can you grow a beard, dude? Because not even I can grow a beard that quick, and I can grow facial hair pretty damn quick. So, but that
I don't know. Carl looks like he's turning 16.
I believe Carl's going to front a metal band before season four.
I think
the way
so.
The kid's looking.
Yeah.
But I wonder if they'll pull a Walt and just get rid of him because he's getting too tall at some point.
Well, we'll have to ask him. Isn't he doing con?
Is he?
He is. So is Sophia. Which I'm sure is going to be the fun joke of the weekend where everyone keeps shouting, Sophia!
Oh, God. That and where's Carl? Where's Carl?
Sophia! In the house.
The entire weekend.
The whole hour of the panel he's doing, someone just keeps shouting, get in the house!
No, I've got it.
He's going to be walking around and just randomly a mob is going to yell, Carl, get in the fucking house.
No, I've got it. All right, listen, here is, for whoever, here is your homework, okay? And make sure you do this in a non-creepy, stalky way, but do this, okay?
Well, that's our listeners at the window.
Yeah, exactly. Basically, what you need to do is create a small papier-mâché house. And when he's on the panel, walk up on the stage and put it on him. Just have him sit there and just make it big enough to where it can encompass the chair he's sitting in and just put it over him and film it. And you will get YouTube hits like you've never seen before. I'm just saying.
That would boost his career for later on. Carl's in the house.
I don't think he'll have much of a career because, I mean, I don't think he's much of an actor. I know that's a bit harsh to say for like a little kid, but I mean, there are good little kid actors out there. I just don't think he's one of them.
Well, honestly, if you're looking at his competition right now, are the kids from Game of Thrones. And my God, if you're comparing the two. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, let's to be fair.
That's true.
To be fair, the kids in Game of Thrones have a lot to be asked of them. Whereas Carl basically has to, as we've seen from the television show and also from the series, basically be a bit of a shit and then get more and more removed as time goes on, which doesn't take a lot of acting to just go back into yourself and not say much. So
basically, Aaron, to answer your question, he should be really good for Doctor Who in a couple of years.
I'm looking forward to... to the new the assistant, just because she's pretty. Is that wrong of me? Does that make me a misogynist?
No.
Okay.
People were doing that for months when they saw Karen Gillan, so you're fine.
Yeah.
Because I know it's like, you know, Simon Pegg got bitch slapped on Twitter today for saying that Princess Leia outfits are hot, but you know, I just have to be careful. I would like to say she's an attractive woman, and just leave it at that. Nobody else saw the Simon Pegg thing, no?
No.
He posted a picture from San Diego Comic-Con of like a gaggle, which I think is the group term of slave Leias. He just basically, I can't remember the exact phrasing of what he said, but, something along the lines of, you know, they're hot. There was a big Twitter backlash from, especially from one particular angry woman who kept calling how he's like, you know, a misogynist and, you know, a complete asshole and, you know.
Really? But they're slave Leias. I mean, they're,
well, that was his argument.
Well, there's an undercurrent going on Twitter with the whole Daniel Tosh thing. So people are kind of touchy right now. So
yeah. And there was also not just that, but then someone got death threats for referring to someone as a tranny, and they were referring to a transgender person, and they thought tranny was a safe term to use. Now, saying that, I know a transgender person, and I've heard them, you know, refer to themselves and other transgender people as trannies, and I just thought that was just a term like gay people. You know, it's gay. They're homosexual, really, but the people say gay, so I just thought it was an accepted term. Personally, so I was surprised to see that got a huge backlash as well, because I was just completely unaware of that one.
Yeah, right now there are just a lot of touchy people at this point with the after the whole, especially over the weekend with the whole Daniel Tosh thing. So, that kind of landed some people in trouble. I think I was watching Daily Show and. What was it? Did anybody else see the Louis C.K. response to this whole thing? Because apparently he was watching the Tosh's Comedy Central show and made a comment about, you know, was commenting about it's a good show and everything. And then he just got slammed on by people and he didn't even know about the whole thing.
Yeah, he probably hadn't even heard about it.
He hadn't even heard about it. And so, you know, he's getting slammed because he gave a good comment to Daniel Tosh about his television show, not knowing what had happened. And he got sort of raked over the coals for it. So there was some touchy internet stuff going on in that region.
I feel like in general, Twitter's starting to become like that. It's starting to become this kind of like hotbed of outrage. It seems to be the same sort of thing. It's basically over people using quote unquote politically incorrect terms. Because people aren't getting outraged about, like, you know, someone who hits their wife or someone who's, you know, who commits child abuse. They're getting outraged about stuff that somebody, like, you know, said that they thought was deemed offensive. And majority of the time, 9 times out of 10, with all these cases, someone wasn't like trying to hurt the other person's feelings. Like Daniel Tosh, absolute moron, but he was, in his defense, trying to be funny. He wasn't actually trying to hurt someone's feelings. So it's very strange. Obviously, I kind of, you know, I'm definitely not defending that guy because he was an idiot, but there seems to be a general, I'm seeing it almost every day now. I'm hearing of a new thing where somebody's getting abuse for saying something that people thought was offensive. Like, it just seems to be a thing now on Twitter. Like, it's the new trend.
Well, I think part of it, well, I haven't run into any of that, but part of it, I think, seems to be the fact where Twitter, and it always seems like with Twitter, it feels like you're coming into the middle of a conversation, if that makes any sense.
Right.
Because if you don't keep up and you don't log in and you don't have it on your phone all the time, you literally are coming into a conversation. So it's real easy to take offense at something that's said where you don't have the full context of what it is.
And well, I think too, because of its nature of the fact that it's only 140 characters.
Yeah.
People aren't really able to explain themselves quite as clearly as they would elsewhere. So if you're cutting corners to try and get to your punchline or your joke or whatever, and sometimes people can get themselves into trouble with wording. Like, it's funny. I mean, earlier today, myself and Wade were emailing back and forth about plans and stuff. And I think at one point we both thought the other was angry with the other person, but we were just trying to make jokes. And it had to get to the point where it's like, oh, dude, I'm sorry. And it's like, no, I'm not. Don't be sorry. I'm not sorry. Are you sorry? And it was just a stupid little circle. So, I mean, it's the problem with online stuff. Because
you can't read. When you try to put sarcasm on paper, and sometimes when you read it back to yourself, it sounds great. It's what you think it was supposed to be, but then you get it. Then you get notes back from other people that, you know, like, are you mad at me or something? What?
Yeah, exactly. It's a lot of the time,
sarcasm is hard to do in 140 characters.
Whatever happened to that sarcasm symbol? What was it called again? Was it the interrobang? No, that wasn't the Interro Bang. That's the question slash exclamation mark.
Actually, it's the porn I enjoy.
Yeah, so people get interviewed while having sex. Interro Bang. Interrogation? Banging? No?
Okay. So I stood in line for 45 minutes.
All right. And... Yeah, wait a minute. What kind of post office are you at that it takes 45 minutes? What the fuck?
Wait. Aaron Sorkin presents The Mailroom.
Just a regular post office. Have you not been into a post office lately?
Yeah, mine's fine. Yeah.
I would be in and out in 2 minutes.
In Ireland, I understand that. There's only 14 Christmas people. Time, everybody knows everybody. Long. By the way, what's the deal with your address? It's like the third block next to Bob's car.
Next to the mushroom. I know.
On the left.
I send him Christmas cards, and I'm like, oh, this is so weird. How will I get there?
Listen, if you don't send many post packages to Middle Earth, that ain't my problem. All right?
I don't know. It was just a normal day after after work going in there.
You have a very busy post office.
Yeah, well, because I closed most of the other ones, so it's the one that's available here. I don't know. What the hell do you want from me? Talk to the post people. What are you asking me?
Why don't you just stop whining about sending me a fucking package?
I got your package right here.
You, John.
I just want to know how much this package was, because I think I have an idea.
Okay, hold on.
Go ahead.
All right, so I get up there, and I finally get up there, and I hand it to the guy, and he goes, okay, all I have to do is type all this information you already hand-wrote onto this form into my computer. I'm like, seriously? He's like, yeah. I'm like, you haven't figured out a better way to do this yet. He's like, nope. Where's it going? Ireland. Oh, okay. And so he's typing away, he's putting in all the individual items, and then the last line on the item is, Aaron, do you know what it was on the customs form?
It was Lucky Charms, you dick.
So it was Lucky Charms. And he starts laughing. I'm like, oh, what's going on? And he goes, oh, just this last line. Oh, okay. It's funny. Like, all
see,
right.
At that point, that's when you say, he's magically delicious too.
Hold on, wait a minute.
I just completely freak him out.
It gets better. So then he goes, okay, so that's going to be $56. Like, wait, what?
Dude, you got ripped off.
He goes, $56. I'm like, he goes, did you want to insure it for more than, I said, it's only worth like, 70 tops in there, the hard drive and the enclosure together.
You forgot about the ocean, didn't you?
And so, no. So I'm like, but wait a minute. I took all this stuff out, put it in this box. Over there, it says anywhere in the world, $12. And he's like, no, that's anywhere in the United States. I said, no, it clearly says anywhere in the world. It actually says worldwide, $12 and whatever the change is. And,
well, he was talking about Canada.
And he goes, well, if you sent to Canada or Mexico, I said, are those the only two places in the worldwide world as far as you guys are concerned? And he goes, well, yeah, because you got to send it, it's got to go over to Europe. There's no more boat that we send things over. I said, well, how do you think all those people got here? They got here on a boat. Never mind. I did not say that.
Now I will say, John.
Yes, master.
In defense of nothing, really, having been to an Alabama public school, the world, according to them, is comprised of just the United States, Canada, and Mexico. So
you sent me a large package before, ladies, and did it cost you this much?
Who did? What?
Well, yes, you send him large packages.
When you sent me a large package before, did it cost you this much?
It's not cheap. It costs
this much.
I don't remember. I mean, it's what I can tell you is that it is true that when you used to be able to send stuff through surface mail, i.e. put it on the slow boat, then it was a hell of a lot cheaper. But now there's only airmail. So yeah. Everything's fucking expensive now.
Right.
Okay. That's strange because, I mean, that seems ridiculously expensive compared to what it costs us to post stuff over to you. Very strange. But anyway, go on, John, with your moaning.
Well, okay, so I brought him over to the side. I said, can you come over? Well, no, I can't come from behind the counter. Well, just walk over this side of the, down the aisle there behind your counter. And it says, does this not say worldwide? He says, yeah, and of course now everyone's staring at me like I'm some sort of crazy man. And I said, it does say that, right? Yeah, yeah, but that's not right. I'm like, okay, hold on. I took this home, unpacked it, packed it into your box, and you're telling me that this isn't what it says, what it means. Oh, well, no, it doesn't. That'd be too cheap. We don't send anything again over the boat. It all goes over the. He goes, well, what do you want to do? I said, well, okay, how can I send it any cheaper? Well, once you get over 4 pounds, it goes up to it goes up over $50. And I go, okay, well, I can take some stuff out because it was 4 pounds and 6 ounces or whatever. I can take some stuff out. What would it be if it was, say, 3.5 pounds? Oh, it would be, let's see, $55.
What?
Well, okay, how do I get it down to be $10? How do I get it down to be that price? Oh, there's no way that can go down to that price.
That's sending like an envelope.
He said, that's it. He said, send it in a padded envelope. How am I supposed to send a hard drive in a padded envelope? I don't know. Okay.
Wow.
So I sent it to him, and then so I said, all right, fine, we'll just ship it. And then so he hands it off to me, and I said, oh, by the way, and this is literally what I said, oh, by the way, that laughing at the end, that was slightly racist. And then I left the building. I waited for him to put the package into the little thing behind him before he came back and gave me my receipt and everything. Before I said that, because I want to make sure it was going to be gone before I said that. But I told him, yeah, that was slightly racist.
On behalf of the British people I abuse regularly, I would like to say your laugh was racist. Yes, well done, John.
Anyway, that was my story. So, Aaron, I'm not sure exactly where this $10 thing comes from. But
I was going by the sign, clearly. but if it makes you feel any better, John, the Sour Patch Kids was worth every penny.
Did you have those?
I've eaten the packet already. They're gone.
Oh, okay. I just grabbed. I was actually going to send you a sippy cup.
Hey, if you want to do the math on how much each Sour Patch Kid cost, feel free to.
Have you had any of your Lucky Charms treats?
They were surprisingly tasty. I didn't think they would be.
Were they magically delicious? Just say they were magically delicious.
No, I will not do that. I am not a stereotype, but they're all right.
What else did I send you?
I haven't tried. You sent me, the Lucky Charm cereal bars, Sour Patch Kids, chewy sweets, sour sweets. You sent me a large pack of Amazing Spider-Man Pop-Tarts, which I haven't tried yet, which I'm looking forward to trying tomorrow morning. And there was one other thing as well that you sent me. Oh, yeah, to be... Now, coming from the man who told the guy in the post office for laughing that he was racist, John also sent me potato pancakes.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Lucky Charms and some potato pancakes.
Do without as you will. As soon as I looked at it, I was like, why is he sending me pancakes? And I saw the potato part and I go, you motherfucker.
They're a Jewish delicacy. Because we all know John's Jewish.
Laugh is going to be on him because I'm going to eat them and they're going to be fucking delicious.
And I'll enjoy every dollar that these would have cost.
Yeah. I go,
that's $50 of goodness.
Yeah. Most expensive pancakes I've ever had.
Boy, racism is sure as expensive.
Yeah, it'll cost you.
Anyway, that's all I had. That's all I had for Aaron. So I'm done with you, sir.
It's okay. I'm done with you. By like doing about like 100 hours worth of file converting, so you can call that hard labor.
It's not my fault that you use a Mac.
It's not my fault you can't put a fucking normal file on the hard drive, but
it is a normal file. I am sorry. No, that is a normal file. I don't know. All of my quality video production tools decode it fine. Adobe Premiere Pro works fine with it. Four CS4. That's like three versions back.
Isn't there? Is this like an AVI QuickTime thing? Is that the problem here?
It's MTS, which is actually it's high def from Canon.
Ah,
why do I feel like I'm the dog listening to people talk and just kind of that.
It's the Charlie Brown hour.
In fairness, like, serves really high right now, so I mean, he actually is hearing these noises.
What the hell was that?
Is Widge even? Oh, there he is.
I'm here.
It's the best Miles Davis album ever.
John, what you didn't realize is Widge every now and again like logs off to do some work while we're talking. So if he knows like I'm not being asked to say anything here, I'll go do some like you know filing over.
Widge,
I don't know what you're talking about. I'm paying attention the entire time.
Because of these interludes, Widge is already up to something else. Season 8.
Well, yeah.
No, he's listening to Sorry I Haven't a Clue right now. Is what he's doing.
No, that's actually how I feel a lot of the time.
Okay.
So I don't have a damn clue.
Now, are we at stress level, like, you know, 4 leading up to Dragon Con right now? Or are you feeling good this year? Because we've all damn near given you a heart attack in previous years.
44 days.
44.
44 days.
I'm all right. I mean, the major part of the thing is for Dragon Con, it's just okay. For most of the panels, it's just show up and do the panel, because I don't put myself on panels in which I don't know a damn thing. In fact, I have literally, when I've been placed on panels where I don't know anything, I will email the track director and go, "I'm so terribly sorry. you appear to have been given misinformation that I know anything about, you know," I'm trying to think of even a,
was stuff.
Stuff, the movie, The Stuff with Gregory Hines. I don't really know anything about that. And, there was a panel about that one year. But no, I'll pull myself off. So for the most part, most of the things I can just show up and bullshit about because that's what I do. Then there's the Fun Fest, which we actually have to plan for, which is a bit stressful because there's logistics and prizes and stuff. And you know, one of the things that I do that does help me remain calm when thinking about the Fun Fest is I could be Browns. John. So
wait, what? What happened?
Nothing. That's okay. We were talking about Doctor Who just then. You're fine.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. That's what I thought was happening.
And, you know, I do a reading, and that's, and then mostly I pick what I'm going to read while I'm there because I want to see what people actually want to hear. And, I don't know. The crazy thing is that, that this year, and I'm trying to figure out what the, what we're, you know, who's going to be around for it, but Aaron already knows this. We are going to be doing a Solve This panel live at Dragon Con.
Yay, yay!
So we're actually going to be able to do it in the same room, which is probably going to throw us off completely.
Yeah, and also get like laughter from people in the crowd or no laughter at all, which is quite terrifying.
Could throw us off completely.
Yeah, whereas before all we had to do was make Widge laugh and we knew we were fine. Whereas now we've got a full room of people.
Yeah.
Terrifying.
But I'm very much looking forward to that.
Yeah, that should be good. That should be good. Okay, so here's a question. I throw this out there because I know Comic-Con was this past weekend, and I was kind of monitoring what was going on just out of curiosity.
I was too.
Did anyone see anything, hear anything that made them happy, sad, suicidal? Made
I was kind of shocked that, okay, we've been talking about The Hobbit at work for some time, and I could have I could easily see that film being 2 parts, and they announced 3, and I'm like, Today we're trying to figure out, because I was thinking about rereading it, and I'm like, but where would it be? So all of a sudden we're trying to, because I know he added a new female character, which is fine. He added Radagast the Brown, which was a minor character in Lord of the Rings, which is our buddy Sylvester McCoy, which is great. All of a sudden we're trying to figure out, you know, off of a 500-page book, or I think less, you know, where the brakes are going to be. You know, it's so, other than it looks great. I love the trailer. I like the people that are in it. All of a sudden I'm like gearing up for, okay, I can do two films. Here it's three. And I'm like, why?
I'm fascinated to see the problem they're having.
I'm thrilled about
with the screening.
Yeah,
have you heard about the screening problems?
Yeah.
The 24 frames per second thing.
Oh, because of the speed. Yeah. Now, the thing is they talked about that when Cameron wants to do film now at a faster speed as well. And that was a couple months ago that he was talking about that. But now what is it's most theaters don't have that type of projector, right?
Yeah. Most don't. And if they show it they can show it on the other projector, fine. But the look is different. And a lot of people have been complaining about how the colors and everything just make it look slightly jarring.
I'm still not used to Blu-ray. Blu-ray to me is a weird thing because
HD freaks me the fuck out. If I'm watching someone's HD television and they're watching like just a normal sitcom, like, you know, Seinfeld, it freaks me the fuck out because it looks like someone just recorded it on their like their camcorder. It actually makes it look less. Makes it look cheaper to me.
Really? Because when I see stuff, my neighbors have a Blu-ray, you know, and they got the big Mongo TV, and when they're showing stuff as an HD, it looks. Who remembers the X-Files when they did this one episode where they used videotape? The cops episode, and it looks, I swear to God, it looks just like that. It's like it's almost like hyper real, but you're not really there. It's disconcerting, and there's a weird movement thing, you know, where sometimes people speed up and then slow down. There's some sort of weird jarring thing.
Funnily enough, HD really works for sports.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that makes more sense because it's something that you would expect to see in real life, if you know what I mean.
Right.
To see that in hyper real, you know, visuals is perfectly natural. But to see, I think, like, I wouldn't want to see Soderbergh stuff made hyper real. You know what I mean? I watch his movies to see the golden glisten.
No, and you don't want Magic Mike hyper real, do you?
You'll see all the lines of Matthew McConaughey's face.
So
wow, that was a weird pause. was everyone contemplating McConaughey's face?
I wasn't contemplating his face.
Whoa,
my girlfriend said his abs are about 20 years younger than the rest of them.
Pretty much, yeah.
Wow,
that's just not where I thought Aaron was going to go with that, and I thought.
I sidestepped it for you, didn't I?
Yeah, I kind of had to get my head around what he actually did say. So
it's like, wait, Aaron took the high road? What the fuck?
Wow.
Now, the cool thing is oddly enough, there were only like two things out of Comic-Con that dealt with books. And it looks like John Scalzi's Red Shirts got really good publicity. He was on the NPR. He was on NPR's Talk of the Nation on Thursday. And then he was apparently all over the place at Comic-Con, which I'm reading Red Shirts, and it is fun. So that's my recommendation for this thing. Yes. And also Neil Gaiman's signing up for Sandman.
Another Sandman miniseries.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Which
that'll be interesting.
Who read The Endless? Did anyone? Read The Endless, and it was so. It did nothing for me.
Yeah, the spinoffs Neil didn't write.
He wrote the like that one Endless one, didn't he? Didn't he do that one?
No, The Endless. He didn't have anything to do with The Endless.
Really? Oh.
Yeah, the endless and the dreaming, the spinoffs of the Sandman.
Well, I know he didn't do the dreaming because he had like Caitlin Kiernan do first parts of it. Oh,
he may have written like one fragment of the first issue.
Mm-hmm.
But that was it.
Oh, okay. All right.
As far as I know.
Now, Roxy, are you talking about Endless Nights?
I think so.
Okay.
Okay, yeah, he wrote that.
Okay. That's the one. It was like that hardcover thing, right?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. The thing I took from that was I always kind of thought that was just a kind of a shorts collection, just so Neil could work with some of the artists who worked on the series. It was sort of like the all-star jam at the end of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Just
that kind of that last thing you get. So I thought that's all I kind of took it as. I didn't kind of look at it as a kind of a.
Yeah. I mean, how could you not sign up to do a Desire story with Milo Manara? I mean,
yeah, this is true.
So, no, I think that's interesting. I'm intrigued at the Marvel movie announcements.
Am I the only person worried about Guardians of the Galaxy?
No.
Pretty much the whole world is.
Yeah.
Well,
I'm so worried about that. And
I have not have heard of any of the characters involved in that movie.
Apart
from Rocket Raccoon, just because it's so fucking weird.
Oh yeah,
Rocket Raccoon was awesome. I had that miniseries. It was fucking great. Now, the only thing I'll say about Guardians of the Galaxy is that, quite frankly, the reason that I'm worried about everything. First of all, let's just point. There's no movie coming out where I just go, I feel so calm. No, because they could all go to shit in a heartbeat. But from a standpoint of everyone, the thing I see about Guardians of the Galaxy, people going, why the fuck are they doing Guardians of the Galaxy? Are they on crack? What's going on? But if you get outside of our sphere of geekdom.
Yeah. Nobody cares.
Well, no. Well, first of all, nobody cares about any of it. I mean,
yeah.
As I saw one article point out, Marvel, I mean, the entire thing should have fallen on its face because nobody knew who fucking Iron Man was.
Right.
I mean, you're at least with Guardians of the Galaxy, when people hear Guardians of the Galaxy, they don't go, they're making a movie based on the song. I mean, because that's more people know the song Iron Man than the character. So the huge risk was if you can make Iron Man into a character that everyone gives a shit about and enjoys, which I think, honestly, of all the characters that they did that for, they did Iron Man the best, partly because of Downey, but they did do it the best. Then they follow that up with, I mean, Captain America, people kind of understand Captain America, or at least know Captain America. They're aware of it in the same way that people are aware of, say, I'm trying to think of something on the DC side that would be an equivalent, because everybody knows Batman and Superman.
Flash. Everybody knows.
Yeah, maybe Flash, but I mean, people are more aware of Captain America.
I was going to say Martian Manhunter.
No, nobody fucking knows.
No.
Wonder
Woman's probably bigger.
Well, no, the reason I say Martian Manhunter is because of the Justice League.
Yeah, she is.
Well, and the other thing to remember is that Wonder Woman had a live action television show with Linda Carter.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but Captain America had a made for TV movie.
Yeah, two, and they were hilarious. But anyway, but the point being is that they were able to turn around and make people like go watch Thor. I mean, honestly, Thor was the one I was worried about because I'm like, first of all, if you know Thor, then you're just going.
And you're like, oh my God, that guy's an asshole. I would want to see a film about him, because that's what I went in to see. Because I never cared for the Thor comics.
Rox was like, I want to see an asshole with a hammer.
Yeah.
But if you just look at it from the standpoint of how are they going to make anyone care about a group of characters nobody's heard of, really, honestly, people have only sort of heard about Iron Man and sort of heard about Thor, I would say. So I think they have the potential to do it. Now, can they pull it off? I have no idea, because at any moment, Disney could step in and fuck everything up, or Marvel could fuck themselves up, or they could actually turn it over to the people who write the comics and that would fuck it up. I mean, there's no telling.
Can I tell you my fear?
Oh, please.
My main fear about this is Rocket Raccoon voiced by Seth MacFarlane. That's my main fear about this.
Although, although
hey, I'm just making that shit up.
No, I understand. But Tuffley, let me do point out that Seth MacFarlane just had a very successful R-rated comedy that actually did so well that I think it broke some records.
Yeah.
So if anything,
Every time I look at the concept art of from Guardians, I'm like, yeah, I'm thinking they're getting Seth MacFarlane for that.
Well, but you could honestly have Seth MacFarlane. Okay, as irritating as I find I did not go see Ted. I actually want to see Ted because I think it could be funny. Because I find the resurrected Family Guy is truly the monkey's paw of animated cartoons. Wish for it to come back, and it did, and it was a shambling corpse that we should have just let it rot.
By the way, Internet, you're welcome for that. That was us. Sorry.
Yeah, sorry. American Dad, I've never given a shit about. I don't find his stuff funny in that respect. However, the one thing I can give him is dude can do voices. And dude can do voices where you wouldn't know that it was him doing it. So that you could literally.
Oh, yeah, he did the voice in Hellboy 2, didn't he?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, he did.
And he was made so much money that we have to give this man total geek credit. He gave Ann Dryden, Carl Sagan's widow, money so that all of Carl Sagan's writings and papers could be archived at the Library of Congress. Kudos to that man.
Well, he's also what is it? He's also doing Cosmos, right? He's also
I think so. And he's got
with DeGrasse.
Yes, yep. And he's got a straight album of American what he calls the American songbook. You know, so he's doing straight. You know, it's like not Tin Pan Alley type songs, but you know, like God Bless America and stuff like that. Straight, you know, and the guy's got a voice. He does have some chops for singing.
Well, yeah, the one of the best R-rated comedy debuts since The Hangover with 20.2 million and did 54.4 in its opening weekend in the US and Canada. And it's overall, according to Wikipedia, again, always right, overall weekend gross set a record for the highest original R-rated movie opening of all time, which I think adjusted dollars would probably fall apart. But I mean, I will say this, and a complete sidebar, which deserves its own hour-long digression at some
sidebar
point. But I do find it fascinating that what used to be a no, there's no fucking way this will work, the R-rated comedy is starting to work.
Mm-hmm.
It's people are starting to actually go.
Well, there's a thing about that, and I think they figured out that as the tentpole films are more geared toward driving more of a sort of kid PG-13 kind of audience, as the tentpole films kind of go for that general audience or teenager audience, that the market that's being left is not the romantic comedy, because usually the romantic comedies would make up the tentpole. Would make up the excess from the tentpole audience, right?
Right.
Because that used to always work in years past, you know, Sleepless in Seattle and all of those fucking Meg Ryan films came out up against, like, you know, Rambo and shit. I'm exaggerating, but it's the same thing. But all of those romantic comedies would come out and they would do really well against these huge action films because it was the alternate market. So now the R-rated comedy has sort of become the alternate market for big tentpole films, because as those increase, as we go toward all tentpoles all the time,
ladies,
get out of my head.
You know, ladies. as we go to those all the time, you know, the adults are going to want to drop their kids off to watch something, and then they're going to want to go watch a stupid R-rated, you know, comedy. You know what I mean?
Now, so, I'm wondering, is this a jocks versus nerds thing? Because a lot of the big, big action movies now are comic book movies.
Hmm. That is, there is some marriage in that. Yeah. I mean, it might be, but I will say that
thing. Because there are a lot of people who don't care about the comic books. There are a huge number of people who don't care about the comics.
Yeah.
But they'll go see the movie anyway.
Yeah.
Right.
So,
yeah, but there's some people who won't go see the movie because it's a comic book too, though.
Who's that?
Jocks.
Were you really picked on as a in high school by the jocks?
Yeah.
Really? I was in theater and they could have cared less.
He was literally.
Yeah, but you were a bigger guy than me, though. I'm a wisp.
I weighed 150 and I was still 6'2". So I wasn't that much bigger.
Aaron Paul, literally Anthony Michael Hall in The Breakfast Club.
I was a beanpole. Wow.
And Toffoli pretty much nailed it, too. I mean, I was. Because I didn't get my growth spurt till I was about 16, 17. So up until then, I was like the shortest kid in class.
Well, Aaron, hang on. You've had a growth spurt?
Ladies.
Okay, so get this.
It's a tadpole.
Oh, Ted has done, holy shit, guys. Ted has done almost $200 million worldwide.
Wow.
He's done $162 million domestic. It had a budget of $50.
I believe
and, deep for the future of this world.
No, but see, here's the thing. I've heard that it's actually good, is the thing.
It's got
But people think Family Guy is actually good.
No, but there's a different... let me put you this way. If Family Guy were to be a movie, the critics would tear it a new asshole. However, Ted has actually gotten some decent reviews. But
I think the Family Guy Legion kind of got it over the first week, but I think the word of mouth over the when the reviews came out, it was like, oh, it's really good. Then other people went, I think.
Yeah, so let's see. If we do adjusted dollars for biggest opening R-rated movies, Hangover Part 2 is number 3. I'm doing comedies.
There's going to be a bunch of horror movies up there.
Oh yeah. Well, no, number 1. Okay, here we go. This will be interesting. No, adjusted dollars now. Adjusted dollars. Number 1, R-rated opening, what would you think it would be?
I'm thinking Terminator.
Really?
Big Mama's House.
Tyler Perry does Terminator.
I think it's probably a Terminator film because I don't... Wait, Terminator 2 was PG-13, wasn't it? I thought it was R.
No, Terminator 2 was R. Terminator 2 was R.
Yeah.
But okay. It is not in the top 10 at all.
Wow. Okay, that's interesting.
Now remember, adjusted dollars. Adjusted dollars.
Okay, Titanic.
No.
It's not rated R.
Titanic wasn't R. Number 1?
The Green Door, Behind the Green Door.
That's X.
Oh. it seemed kind of weak to me. I thought it was
okay.
R.
Fine. Midnight fucking cowboy. Go.
No. Okay. Number 1, Matrix Reloaded.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. Adjusted dollars. Now, what is this? Hang on. What is the thing here? 369 million. What's the little footnote here? Hang on. There's a little footnote on the column. What the fuck
it may
is
have been
it?
Re-released.
The
maybe
week
come back out again.
Wait, here we go. Does not include additional releases, if any. Okay. But wait a minute.
It does not include the rave scene because that shouldn't have been. Okay,
that doesn't make any sense. Okay, because number 2, this is actually reversed because I would have guessed Passion of the Christ because it was R. It did adjusted gross $472 million, which would have been above Matrix Reloaded. So I think their list is fucked.
Passion of the Christ is probably.
It's not. Hang on, it's not sorted by adjusted gross. There we go. Lies. Okay, number 1.
I would imagine Passion of the Christ would be the one that's been re-released because I know it has.
How much? How much does it take to mail Passion of the Christ to Ireland?
Well,
$45.
Well, let's see. All right, with or without Mel Gibson's ego?
With.
Oh fuck. Well, they don't.
You can put that in an envelope and hope it gets crushed.
Just send them the video online, John.
Here's
what something like that. It's really hard to nail down a price.
Here's what you do. You wait until he does something stupid and wait for the extradition to kick in, and then you don't have to pay anything.
Nice. Okay, so here we go. The completely different list. Number 1. This is very interesting. Number 1. Is Beverly Hills Cop.
Wow.
because it made $35 million in 1984.
No, I can see that.
Yeah, it was the highest grossing movie of 1984.
There you go. And so if you adjust, just to give you an idea, dear listeners,
48 Hours made more money than Beverly Hills Cop for some reason.
But that may have been the year before.
Well, but it's 48 Hours isn't on the list. It's not. It's nowhere on the list here.
Yeah, I don't know why. I just always thought 48 Hours made more.
For our younger listeners and for Aaron, to explain the difference between 1984 movie tickets and today, if you take
Can I just say I was 1 year old?
Can I just say,
to really dig the knife in a little bit?
Fuck off, y'all.
Thank you. Thank you, Robo Scott. Now, you know what? That was a great defense, Scott. Well, wait, it's the soundboard.
He didn't read that either. It's okay.
$35.8 million in 1984 equals $531.8 million in 2012. And basically what they're doing to adjust it, just so you know, is they take the number of tickets sold and multiply it by a ticket price today. So, that sounds like a Rob Koff. Is that a Rob Koff? Hi, Rob Koff!
You should subtract those, like Pluto Nash and whatchamacallit movie ticket sales from that, though, and it balances out.
That's true.
What are the movies where he wore the fat suits?
Nutty
Professor.
Nutty Professor.
Nutty Professor, yeah.
Why was I so quick to answer that?
If there wasn't the Nutty Professor.
Yeah, that actually made money, though.
Why did I want to be the first to answer that is actually what I should be asking myself.
That we ask ourselves that every week on Weekend Justice.
Why don't they just count ticket sales when they keep bragging about this sort of thing? Why do they still count it as money? Would it not make more sense to just say it sold this many tickets?
Butts in the seats.
It doesn't look as impressive.
No, it's.
I think it would.
No, it doesn't, because basically, what you want to be able to say is it's one of the highest grossing comedies of all time, but they're not saying in unadjusted dollars.
And especially on the IMAX side of the house, if you're selling IMAX and 3D tickets, that lowers it even more.
So anyway, so Rob,
what list are you looking at or doing?
We were talking about the success of Ted, basically getting almost $200 million worldwide.
Yay!
Now you saw Ted. Did you see Ted?
Yes, I fucking loved it. I want to go see it again.
Holy shit! There you go, friends.
Finally, there's a stuffed animal that has my pop culture sensibilities with my sense of grumpiness and general disillusionment with the world and my propensity to swear when angry. It's awesome.
All right, so...
And, I mean, the thing is about Ted that's great, though, the throwaway jokes. There's, like, these little fast jokes that he throws away and these little weird pop culture references that you're like, 10 minutes later, you're fucking laughing.
So, wait a minute.
I guarantee when you see the movie later, you'll catch other jokes.
So, Rob, what you're saying is it's a lot like Family Guy when it used to be funny.
Yes.
Okay. Anyway.
I'm glad to see Seth McFarlane going out of his comfort zone with pop culture jokes.
Yeah.
I don't think Ted would work, though, if he didn't have Mark Wahlberg, though. Because I think he sort of needed more of a straight guy to bounce off of that, sort of, a little bit. And, I think that movie needed that.
So
just a straight on comedy without a straight guy would not work.
So here you go. Very quickly, here's your top 10 adjusted dollars R-rated films of all time. Number 1, Beverly Hills Cop. Number 2, Passion of the Christ. Number 3, Terminator 2.
I was close.
Yeah, once we sorted it right, yes. Matrix Reloaded, number 4. Saving Private Ryan, number 5.
Yeah, okay.
First Blood Part 2, number 6.
Ech.
Beverly Hills Cop 2, number 7.
Ugh.
The Firm, number 8.
Ah,
wow. Surprising.
Grishamania. $48.5 million, and Tom Cruise. $48.5 million in 1993. So, Air Force One, number 9, and Stir Crazy, number 10.
Whoa, 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 whoa. Air Force One was a radar?
Yeah, it was.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is it weird that I'm surprised that American Pie isn't in that list?
Well, let's see. American Pie...
I think it won on word of mouth.
Well, here you go. American Pie shows up at number 36, and it's American Pie 2. It did $63 million in 2001, adjusted to $203 million.
I think
part of it, though, yeah.
The original American Pie was only because of word of mouth. Yeah, so it did better on the second weekend, I think, than the first weekend.
Well, but this is the domestic run. So American Pie shows up on this list at number 66.
I thought you were only doing for opening weekend.
No, this is the whole thing. You're right. This is top opening weekend. You're absolutely right. This is just opening weekend.
Yeah.
Where does Caddyshack or Stripes fall in?
Where does what?
Caddyshack or Stripes?
Like Stripes.
I don't know that they have those in here because there are certain older films that I've tried to look up and they don't have numbers. Let me look.
And I think also in the case of American Pie, and I may be wrong about this, but it kind of seems like American Pie was kind of the last film to kind of get everybody off video.
Yeah.
Well, to kind of get
traction via video. I think it was in that American Pie, Austin Powers kind of area of time. I think.
Well, I saw it in a packed cinema house when it was first released, but I think John was right. I mean, it wasn't the hyped movie when it was coming out.
Yeah, it didn't come out of the gate really strong, I don't believe.
Yeah.
No, definitely not. I didn't realize we were talking an opening weekend. I thought we were talking about...
Well, obviously not. It didn't go...
To be honest, there really haven't been that many films that have kind of gained off word of mouth in recent memory.
No, that's true. I mean,
they all opened huge.
Well, yeah.
I feel like The Hangover was a bit like that, though. Sorry, I talked over you, Rob. Say that again.
But then I realized you're talking about R-rated film, so never mind.
Yeah. No, they have started adding these because, Rob, for example, Caddyshack, lifetime gross was domestic 39.8, adjusted to 117. So, that's over its entire life.
I feel like that was very much like a video popular movie.
Well, no, because, I mean...
Caddyshack wasn't. Caddyshack was considered a huge hit. Animal House is a little bigger, I think.
Yeah.
But it was still like all of these guys that were coming off SNL still. It was still not that far removed from that. So I don't think you get to the thud until you get to, you know, even 1941 didn't do anything to really hurt it that much. And 1941, was that the thud? Was that the one that didn't work?
That was considered a thud, yes. Yeah. Because it had a production, it had a production budget released in 1979, a $35 million production budget in 1979. Fucking huge. It only did domestically 31.7, but interestingly enough, it did worldwide 92.
Yeah.
So it actually made money.
It did well internationally. I've been trying to figure out, is that because Saturday Night Live, they had started syndicating it? Or because I can't figure out, because Spielberg wouldn't have been that big yet.
What year was it?
79.
Nine.
Oh. Well, I would have been coming off Blues Brothers.
He would have been, 1941 was between Raiders and Close Encounters.
Yeah.
But he had also done Jaws. So he was not Spielberg big, but he was still pretty big.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, that is.
The other thing, too, is that Spielberg, during that era, was one of the first American filmmakers to really get the idea of a world market that would take his films to China, would take them to, like, Scandinavia or, like, Poland and put them in theaters. He was, like, one of the first people that was really doing that. So you could argue that starting probably from, I would say the era of like American Graffiti with Lucas onward is sort of the beginning of like, or maybe Jaws was sort of the beginning of foreign distribution in American films and cinemas for like the first time in the post-war period, sort of since like the 50s. But Spielberg really, especially with E.T., sort of pushed that envelope of getting the film in as many theaters worldwide as possible. So some of that bounce. It's probably because of that. Because
he knew that once he got it in a theater, it would stay there for months and months and months.
Yes.
Holy shit, that is what I remember about E.T.
And that doesn't happen anymore either.
No, because, I mean, it gets pushed out. But I remember, I was looking, the release date was June of 1982. E.T. was still in fucking theaters come Christmas. I mean, it was literally, and this was back before, you had multiplexes.
Yeah, I remember E.T. was still in theaters like a year and a half after it came out. It was like summer of the next year before E.T. disappeared.
And I have to say, I'm surprised how quickly Avengers left the cinema, considering the crazy money it was making. I mean, like, it was gone within a month. And
I think once they announce the home video date, you know, you start to lose the audience.
Oh,
not
yeah.
Not me.
Well, no. I mean, for a typical release. Release, once they announce the home video date.
Then people are like, oh, I'll just wait.
Then people will think, well, it's 6 weeks to the home video release. Or what a lot of people do, where the markets are, where you have the $2 movie theaters, if you have the release date, for the video release date, that means the cheaper movie theater is going to get it shortly, because it'll get it before it hits video or right to where it's about to hit video. If you have that, like the $2 cinema places.
Well, and the other thing, Aaron, that I find interesting is that, first of all, I would have gone to see it again in IMAX, because I saw it on IMAX the first time and really enjoyed it. I could have skipped the 3D, but the IMAX I thought really added to it. But there's
film?
Avengers. But there's so few IMAX theaters and they're booked up contractually. So I think what you're seeing is a combination of, I mean, shit just gets pushed out because things just don't hang around. Because again, the video is going to come out, and especially with something like Avengers, though, you would think it would hold on for longer, which is weird. I think
they're missing a trick on this.
What's that?
Yeah.
I think they're missing a trick on this by not keeping it longer. Although, if they're going to do the thing with the extended cut, if that rumor is true, then discussion is mute.
I'd go see it.
Yeah.
Especially if it was on IMAX. Because that was good. I tell you what, Brad Bird resurrected IMAX for me. No shit. Because I went to go see Avatar on a big, big IMAX screen at Mall of Georgia. And shit. I mean, I preferred it on the smaller screen, but
you
didn't
see any of the Dark Knights in IMAX, did you?
No.
I did.
But see, part of the problem is that Mall of Georgia is in my opinion, is a shit IMAX setup, because it's just a fucking huge screen that you can't sit far enough away from. I mean, it's literally like being 6 years old and sitting right in front of the television.
I will say I like the other Mall of Georgia theaters, just not the IMAX screen. I think I like the facility there. I just don't like the IMAX screen.
Well, it is the one full-sized IMAX screen that we have, like, in this time zone or something. I mean, it's fucking crazy. But I honestly don't care, because I went
Isn't there one still in downtown?
No.
Oh, it's okay.
Doesn't Farnsworth have one?
Well, they do, but I mean, they're not going to show Avengers.
Really? Because the Science Center here is showing Batman, and they did Avengers in their Omnimax thing.
Yeah, but that's because they actually want to make money.
The Space Center, the fucking Space Center.
Rocket
Center had Mission Impossible 3 with the Batman trailer in IMAX.
Holy shit.
Mission Impossible 4. I'm sorry, with the IMAX.
I mean,
that was the thing with the first Dark Knight Rises trailer in it that they shot in IMAX.
Yes. Yeah. But no, I saw Ghost Protocol on IMAX and absolutely fucking loved it. Went back and saw it again on IMAX because I thought the actual cut down IMAX screen is better than the side of a building sized IMAX screen. I think you actually, because you're not spreading out the picture, it's actually a better picture.
I saw Inception on IMAX, and that was awesome.
Yeah,
it was.
I would have, knowing now, I would have gone to see that on IMAX. Because at the time, I was burnt out on IMAX, but, you know, saw Avengers on it. And my plan is to go see Dark Knight Rises on it. So, but
apparently, the run in London for Dark Knight Rises on IMAX is almost sold out entirely. So there's the whole run is nearly booked out. just kind of amazing.
Wow. I'm wondering how many IMAX screens they have in London. Because honestly, like here in Atlanta, what's that?
I think there's four. The Hammersmith Odeon has one.
Okay.
There's one up by, Hampstead Heath. I think there's one by Hampstead Heath. I think there's one by Greenwich, and then there's another one in near Trafalgar, but I might be wrong.
The Odeon one is the one I'm aware of, but I'm sure there are more. I went to the Odeon one and watched Watchmen on
that. That's the best one. That's the best one.
It is definitely very much like, holy shit, this thing is huge.
So I'm thinking, not counting Mall of Georgia, there are like maybe two in the Atlanta area, or the metro area. I think there is one at Stonecrest, but that is way on the Conyers side.
Right.
And then I think, where is the other one? I'm not going to say Atlantic Station. I don't know if they put one in Atlantic Station
or not. They do have one in Atlantic Station. That's where.
Okay. That is the one I'm thinking of. Okay.
Yeah. Interesting. So no, I was just curious to see, like in the New York City area, how many they have. And I mean, I was looking at the IMAX website where they do include all IMAX. Yeah. Well, they've basically got, 13, it looks like.
Yeah.
So.
But there's also a lot more people there, too.
No, I know, but I was going to look. I was looking at that and compare it to London. So.
Yeah.
Just out of curiosity to see. And they list 7 in London.
Okay. That sounds about right. If you're judging by population density.
But yeah, so I hope they do the Avengers extended cut, and I hope they bring it back to IMAX, because I would fucking be there, seriously.
And I think that would really challenge the Titanic and Avatar for the top grossing films then at that point, because they both, that's one of the reasons why they're ahead of the Avengers at the moment, is because they had re-releases. So
hang on, what is the release date for the Blu-ray of Avengers again?
I can't remember. I just reported on this too.
It's
Hang
September.
Up.
I think it's September.
September 25th.
Yeah, I would expect the extended cutout either before or slightly after the Blu-ray release.
I think it's the weekend of Dragon Con, I think. I bet it's Labor Day weekend.
You think?
If you want a holiday weekend and Batman will have been out already, and I mean, there's nothing now.
Now, if it is out the weekend of Dragon Con, surely someone's gonna have to fucking play it at the convention, right?
Probably not.
With the IMAX setup.
Well, no, I mean that would unfortunately.
That would be crafty.
Well, unfortunately, not a lot of studios understand what Dragon Con is, so they don't see it for what it is, which is basically. I mean, it is the largest fan convention in North America, but it is the biggest convention of its kind, of any kind, in this entire region of the United States. So they're missing an absolute trick.
I think in the U.S., I think it's fairly,
No, but what I'm saying is that in the southeastern United States, you've got New York Comic Con, you've got Comic Con in San Diego, you've got other cons. That's what we have here in the southeast. So you're missing an entire fucking region of people who are starving for shit. If you don't get your stuff to DragonCon.
Although you mentioned the words that's aggravating me right now, but is bigger than New York Comic Con. I think it's different. I think you have to classify it different than Comic-Con.
Oh, no, it's different.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just saying, as far as missing a trick by getting in front of an audience.
Oh, yeah.
But they, because Comic-Con, we all know that Comic-Con, they're just
Corporate-Con.
They're industry shows is what they are. They just often let people in so they can sell them shit.
And and it's also in close distance to, you know, studios, home base of operations.
It is.
Right.
But
the thing is even New York Comic Con's that way too. I mean, when you look at like, if you want to look at like cosplay, it's like 10%. Dressing up.
And toughly, bear in mind that Comic-Con actually used to be a Comic-Con. I know that sounds crazy, but it used to be.
I seem to remember that. Actually, the funny thing is, I watched Anthony Bourdain was one of the, went to Comic-Con this year.
Yeah.
And he was talking about I saw one of the interviews where he was going on about all of the comics he was actually there to get.
Yeah.
Which was really cool. And apparently there was a comic book that he wrote that came out, which I now want to find. But it was just funny hearing Bourdain geek out about, you know, which old comics he was going to get. And he was like the only person who actually mentioned comics the entire weekend.
He loves old records and comics.
Yeah.
He would be Ross's grumpy old uncle who cooks.
Yeah.
But anyway, Rob, we were actually talking about Comic-Con news, but you've seen something recently that you need to tell us about, right?
Oh, you mean that, not the other one. Okay, yes.
Well, whichever one. I mean, you tell me. What do you need? What can you tell us?
Okay. Well, I saw, if you're going to do, this is how weird they are with Batman. The fucking screening, the press screening is at 9 in the fucking morning. Who the fuck has a screening of Batman at 9 in the morning?
Somebody has to be somewhere at 2 o'clock.
Yeah. So I decided I was going to watch the first two movies and then go to that. So I
sort
of had it all squared. Yeah. No, which makes sense because a lot of the first one is sort of drift off into the ether. I will tell you that as much as Heath Ledger owned the last Batman movie.
Holy sh! Oh, go ahead.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt owns this one.
Oh.
Oh, he does. Wow. I wasn't expecting his name to pop up.
And then I'm being very nondescript, so I don't mess anything up. And then Hardy's great as Bane. I was not expecting much. He was great.
Did they figure out what voice to give him?
Yes, sort of.
Okay, good.
It's
Wacko's voice from the Animaniacs. I
mean, the problem they have with this Batman movie is the last one was so fucking good. How do you top it? And I think it's apples and oranges. Like everyone afterwards is like, well, how do you get a top five? Like it's apples and oranges. You can't really have that conversation. But I will say that, you know, your standard regulars, Gary Oldman's great. Michael Caine is great. Morgan Freeman gets to break out and do a little more. When you think about what makes the Batman movies great, up until Christian Bale won, everyone had a fucking Oscar for Christian Bale in that movie, you know, almost in those movies. And the acting ensemble around that movie is just pretty amazing. So everyone will say, oh, it's a superhero movie. It's not. It's sort of like, it's a straight on ensemble piece with the trappings of a superhero movie, but it's really pretty good. And it's one of those movies at the end. It's kind of like, you know how good you felt when you saw the Avengers? You're like, thank you. This is what I wanted.
Yeah.
This is kind of like the somber version of that. You still have that sort of euphoria, like, wow, that was fucking great, but you're numb. I mean, you are physically drained and physically numb when you see the end of this, which
ladies.
I haven't. What now?
Never mind.
Wait, you mean Dark Knight Rises isn't a comedy? Shit.
No.
All right.
It's not about Chris Knight from the Brady Bunch. Sorry. Thank you.
When it's time to change, it's
I know it's really. It completely met all of my expectations.
So you're not that guy who's getting death threats for giving a bad review. But on
oh my
tomatoes.
God!
Oh no, well, I'm not that guy. Well, they embargoed it. At first, when they said to join the screen, they're like, you have to hold your reviews till, you know, later in the week. And then we got there and they're like, you can review it. And then afterwards, they were reading, like some of the people, you know, were like on their phones reading the reviews, like, oh, this guy's going to have his house burned down. Oh, wait. Oh, this guy's going to get stabbed. Oh, wait. This guy better not come to Comic-Con. You know,
amazing is that it's like Rotten Tomatoes, the guy who's in charge of Rotten Tomatoes posted something saying we've had to shut down comments on the Dark Knight Rises reviews because you people are such dicks. And I mean, because his point was like, look, So he had a negative review. So what? I mean, he's been critiquing movies for a long time. He may have some valid points that you just don't agree with them. What the fuck? Now,
but there's
some other guy,
people who haven't even seen the movie yet having a go at him as well, though. You know what I mean? People are hating on him and they haven't even seen it.
Yeah, I know, which is hilarious. Yeah. Now, the one thing I thought was lame was that there was a critic who basically posted a link out like he had written a negative review, but it was just to drive traffic to his site. And they basically said, yeah, you're off. We're not counting your reviews towards the tomatoometer or whatever they call it anymore. And I'm like, you know what? Fair enough, because that's lame. I mean,
yeah.
And this does, I have been saying for some time, I needed to do a Widge Goes Off video about commenting. And so I'm going to have to do that now just because the worst than YouTube. I don't even read Rotten Tomatoes comments because they are so.
I'm so sad that Rotten Tomatoes is kind of this thing that's gotten kind of corrupted.
Well, then they get bought by Fox.
And I don't really read film reviews anymore.
When you get to a certain age, though, I mean, you really kind of you stop taking other people's opinions that seriously because you know yourself whether you like it or not. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but
there's no review in the world that's going to make me decide differently about the Avengers. You know?
Seriously, I think part of the problem with Rotten Tomatoes is since Fox bought it, the people who are running the comments, they've reduced the number of moderators on the site, I think.
Yeah.
And it just feels like more of an automated feel to it where there isn't an actual person physically checking those comments the way they used to, and I think that's part of your problem. Television Without Pity did the same thing when NBC bought them.
Yeah,
which I thought that's kind of what led to kind of people not being interested in that site because the original people that were doing it were also the moderators, and they left when NBC bought it. So that happens.
Yeah. But which I liked with the film. I liked how they sort of played with the concept of time and the structure of the plot and the fact that they sort of just acknowledged – it was sort of like they said, yeah, the last movie was really great. Let's get on with it. And they didn't pull any, like, shortcuts or – I mean, Nolan doesn't do that anyway. But it's like the Avengers in that the minute it ends and you leave, you want to go get back in line again to go see it again.
Wow.
Holy shit. Oh, anyway, so.
Yeah. Okay.
And I'm trying to be as nondescript as humanly possible.
Thank you.
Just, Burt Ward is not in it.
But, so you'll be at DragonCon.
But, they're a piece of work. But,
DragonCon or Burt Ward?
No, the first time I saw Adam West, there was a convention in Mount Vernon, Illinois, and their guests were Adam West and Frank Gorshin. And Frank Gorshin and Adam West are there, and they're doing the opening day panel, you know, welcome to con, whatever. Their agent, who's this guy with sunglasses, and he looks like he fucking fell out of a Peter Frampton concert, is like, now, Adam and Frank will be happy to, you know, do autographs and sign questions for you. Their pictures are you can buy a picture for $30. They're only going to sign their pictures, and the autographs are, every autograph is $75. And they won't sign anything else you bring in. So I'm like, fuck that. I'm getting Frank Gorshin's autograph because he's a better fucking actor, you know, and that was my money for the weekend, you know, that was at the time when we were right around Batman 2 or 3 with the old series, and Adam West was so bitter and he just couldn't conceptualize why he was not in the Batman films. It was really sad.
Well, if Schumacher had been allowed to make another one.
Oh, God. Well, Rob, I'll say this. I would have paid $70 for a Frank Gorshin signature if I could get him to do an impression to go along with it.
No, he did impressions. His whole panel, just did impressions. And this was
awesome.
Right before he started doing George Burns. So he's like, I want to try out my George Burns a couple times this weekend. I can't tell you why, you know? But, and they showed – the coolest thing they did is they showed his Star Trek episode. And he did a commentary for it.
Nice.
That was the coolest thing that they did. And that was because some fan brought it and said, hey, if we show this, will you talk about it? And that's how that happened.
Wow.
But, yeah. So, but anyway, that was my very nondescript version of Batman. Holy shit. I want to go see it again.
Nice.
Now, do you want to go see Gillian Anderson at Dragon Con? Segway.
Woo!
I was just about to say Lee's job just got a little more interesting this year.
Want to see, oh, want yeah. to see who?
What's that?
Who? I'm sorry.
Gillian Anderson.
Gillian Anderson's been been confirmed for Dragon Con.
Oh.
Or Gillian. Gillian?
Oh, I can have her sign my record.
Hey, her middle name's Lee.
she made an electronic record.
Yes, she did.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
And she was in
Johnny Goldfra.
And she was in Johnny English Reborn.
Oh, and man. she was Lady Deadlock in Bleak House. She did a good job, you know, after Diana Rigg did it. So
and I believe she was the object of Simon Pegg's pleasure in many episodes of Spaced.
She was.
Yes.
She looked terrible in shoulder pads.
Turned down Doctor Who.
And she played Meatloaf's wife in The Mighty. And they were both really good. And I'm going, wait a minute, what the hell?
Circle gets the square.
There you go.
So that's going to be you. You're the one who's going to have The Mighty question.
Yeah, that was a great movie. That was a great movie.
What is traditionally Lee's big room? Because we know what Lee's little room is.
Okay,
ladies.
Is this a sexual reference?
I believe that would be called the Claremont Lodge.
Whoa!
Yes.
Okay, let me just say this. In addition
I think you can get the Barrowman panel there, but I don't think you can get the...
hang on. In addition to putting Carl in the house, friends, what I want someone to do is to take Lee and Gillian Anderson to the Claremont Lounge and film it. And that would be amazing. So
that would be awesome.
And John Barrowman. And Barrowman.
Oh, my God.
I would love to have Barrowman.
If you can also get a small
I'm going to send an email.
Huh?
What are you sending an email about?
I don't know.
That particular idea.
Oh, God.
Barrowman!
John Barrowman in person is much different than John Barrowman on Torchwood.
Was doing a lot of interviews and stuff. They had him as co-host
at Comic Con.
He was actually pretty good. Of course, they use the same sort of lines. Like, is this your first Comic Con? Are you a Comic Con version? If you have it, what do you make of this? What is about your show? Okay, next. I mean,
they kind of have them. There's certain things they want them to stick to on script, probably. Probably get
the prompt. Yeah. But no, Rob, trust me. I know what Barrowman can be like because I've seen him on Nevermind the Buzzcocks.
Oh, my God. Yes.
The dude is insane.
Yeah, that's a particular brand of hell my wife is not happy that got unleashed upon my house because I didn't leave the house for 3 days.
We've been here for 5 hours.
Because you thought Barrowman was outside stalking him.
Buzzcocks, not number one.
Oh, yes.
David Tennant was good on Buzzcocks, too. But...
Yeah, yes, well, he's...
Oh, go ahead, Aaron.
I was going to say he's very good in if you can get him in a casual setting. Like, he's great on Graham Norton as well. Ladies.
I'm just pissed because Simon Amstell's doing, like, an entire month of shows in New York.
Oh, I know, that guy shouldn't be working.
Rock?
Yes.
What's Simon Amstell?
We could film a version of Thelma and Louise at Dragon Con with Patricia Quinn and Gillian Anderson.
No, wait a minute. So, Aaron, what's wrong with Simon Amstell?
He's a dick. No, I don't like him. good cue, John. No, just because you said you were pissed because he was doing shows in New York. And it wasn't because you couldn't go. You're just pissed he was doing shows.
No. I'm just pissed that I can't go. I'm like,
work.
Yeah.
I know, but it just sounded like I'm just like pissed off. That guy's
No. I'm just pissed that he is doing an entire month of shows in New York that I'm not going to be able to see because his last show, Do Nothing, was fucking brilliant. So I would love to see.
Was that the one that was filmed in Vicker Street in Dublin?
Yes.
Okay, I saw it on BBC recently.
Yeah, that's a great show. That is a really funny, very well executed show. So
I was always more of a Mark Lamar guy, with never mind the Buzzcocks though. He was just always slightly more succinct dick, let's say.
Well, no, and I understand that. I mean, they basically, as I understand it, they had like filming an episode of Buzzcocks, which gets cut down to 30 minutes, would take 2 hours with Simon. But I did like I did like the episodes. I thought I liked all of Buzzcocks, but I liked Simon's, in, you know, just sheer anarchy of you never knew what the fuck he was going to do next. I did appreciate that. And I really liked the Christmas bumper episodes where they would do insane shit. Like, you know, bring out the bands and they would have to do musical challenges against each other. And it was just nuts. So, but his comedy is good. And I just found out he's got a sitcom, which I did not know was, I mean, I think it's finished its second season. So I've got to catch up on that too. So.
Mm. Where he plays a character named Simon Amstel.
Yeah, it's a fictionalized version of himself who has recently quit a panel show.
Yeah.
But, yes. So, Aaron, I think your alter ego was asking about introductions, which is probably a good idea to do that since we're just about to the time where we're about to do recommendations again. We do that. We just get going and don't stop. So, yes. Whoa. Hello.
Because we can't stop.
Yes.
In the winter of the summertime. It makes it hard getting jiggy with it.
Oh, God. Yes.
Thank you.
We should, before that happens again, we should do introductions and we should do them starting now.
We've seen you staggering out of the work week, but now it's time to buck up, little camper. The weekend is here. This is a needcoffee.com podcast, and we're going to help you the rest of the way home. Stand by for Weekend Justice.
Weekend Justice. It's the Weekend Justice podcast here on needcoffee.com, the internet's number one audio train wreck. There is a mime train wreck that is slightly more popular than us, but we're gaining on them. We're here in the Hall of Weekend Justice with the Weekend Justice League, and I will endeavor to introduce them going from my right to your left. We have Rob is with us. Hi, Rob.
Welcome to Shawshank.
That beam looks very sturdy. We also have Tuffley is with us. Hi, Tuffley.
You're still fearing and distrusting mimes, aren't you?
Well, does anyone really... Is anyone comfortable or trusting around mimes?
No, my boss was dressed as a mime today.
That is true.
There's only one mime I'm comfortable around, and that's it.
That's
if
it?
You rape a mime, is that a joke that wouldn't get as much outrage as the Tosh did?
Well, no, if Daniel Tosh told that joke, then he would.
Okay.
Okay, so...
Introductions!
Rox! If Rox of Spaz House is here. Hi, Rox.
Tickets, please. Tickets.
Hurry up, please. It's time. We also have Aaron Poole is with us. Hi, Aaron.
I do not endorse the rape of mimes.
John, I think that needs to go on the soundboard.
I state your name. No.
God. And of course, John from the Neat Geek is here. Hi, John.
I assumed that I was going to be on both Bad Men.
Nice.
Oh my God. So, okay. So last minute thoughts on Comic-Con before we move on to recommendations. Does anyone have anything at all? Other than
you can save a lot of money by not going to Comic-Con and just peruse all the sites. Huffington Post has reporters, yep. Salon, Slate, IO9, Gawker, Gizmodo, any number of sites will have all of yep. the stuff that you, all the rumor stuff. And here's a really cool thing. This is what I did was, go to the Twitter hashtag trending, and a lot of people that are on the floors who are convention goers, they're all posting pictures and stuff. So there you go. As a help me rocks, I just saved you guys tons of money and heartache. Done.
And somebody posted the entire Doctor Who panel.
Wow.
Yeah. Like all 48 minutes of it.
Oh, cool.
Well, the one thing that I really want. The one thing I really want, which hasn't happened yet, is I want to see like the footage from Pacific Rim.
I'd like to see the 12 minutes from The Hobbit.
Yeah, pretty much all the footage. I'm dying to fucking see the footage. That's about the only thing that doesn't get posted.
I read Film Critical.
I think someone's bringing it with him to Dragon Con.
Okay, cool.
I think.
Can you imagine going into Hall H? Hall H is like, what, 6,500 seats?
It's fucking insane.
It's insane.
It's like an airplane hangar, yeah.
It is. It really is. Anyway, Aaron, what were you saying?
I was reading the Film Critic Hulk, you know, the writer for one of the things, and they were saying how they were just blown away by the Pacific Rim stuff more than anything else on the day. They said it was just, it looked amazing. As much as a caricature of the Incredible Hulk talking about movies can get you excited about a film, I have to say that piqued my interest more than anything else that I've come across so far. So look out for that.
They have done a really good job of keeping the lid on the footage because it used to be you could find leaked things for about 5 minutes, but now there's nothing. I mean, because
The second the Tron thing hit the floor, everybody had it.
Yeah, well, but again, I think that was staged, frankly.
That might have been, yeah.
Well, yeah, normally you see the Marvel footage pretty quickly, and I haven't seen any that of the Ant-Man sneak peek that they gave or the Iron Man 3 stuff. So definitely seems tighter control this year.
Yeah, they are, because you saw none of the Who trailers are up. All the Who trailers were up within like 30 seconds of it airing. Last year.
Right.
Although, did everyone see the Robert Downey Jr. Intro walk to Luther Vandross?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was old.
I did also like the appearance he put in at the kids' costume contest. That was nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I posted the link in the chat, but for those who...
Well, here's something real... Real quick, yes. Disney had off. There was, I think, this year a lot more off-site stuff than previous years, and I think Disney was AWOL. They had a site off the San Diego.
Well, they weren't there the last couple of years. They hadn't really been there the last couple of years, though.
Well, yeah, they were there a little, but mostly they've been saving their shit for D23, is what it is, but. I think they understand that there's certain things that they just got to bring to the table for this. Like, now I will say I am intrigued because I understand they played some Lone Ranger footage, and I am fucking terrified of that. I mean,
that got like almost no response on that one. That was like one of the losers.
Wow, really?
So was the Oz one. And the funny thing is after Downey bowed out, I thought that was done, but I didn't know that James Franco jumped in on it. The trailer looked okay, but I mean, it's not gonna, nobody cared.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the only reason I would want to go see that is because of Franco, because I think he's great in everything. I mean, he was like the one bright point in Green Hornet, And yeah. that's a movie yeah. with no brightness whatsoever. Yeah. And yet he was able to bring something to the table.
No, I was just going to say they have Michelle Williams, Mila Kunis, and Rachel Weisz. So that's a it's a pretty nice lineup of yeah. folks there. But sorry, yeah, you got to go ahead.
I was just reading. I just read something that they had announced Skrillex was doing the soundtrack for Wreck-It Ralph.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, nice. Yeah, so, that actually looks
soundtrack for what?
Wreck-It Ralph.
Wreck-It Ralph.
I don't know that.
I'm actually really looking forward to that. That's the video game Disney movie that John C. Reilly is.
Yeah, playing. and they also had extended footage from that as well.
Okay, cool.
They're releasing the soundtrack from Escape from New York, where again? John Carpenter, I guess they're doing a cleanup or whatever.
Okay.
But just for people to know that he actually wrote the soundtrack.
He did all of his films except for The Thing. That was Ennio Morricone. And what's interesting is Morricone basically did a soundtrack that sounds like John Carpenter, which is what's really fucking weird. But anyway. All right. So we should probably mosey towards recommendations because it's getting about that time. And we should see who wants to go first. Who wants to go first?
I will.
Go ahead.
Released this week, as far as I'm aware, but it may be a little slightly below than that, is Les Hives, an album by The Hives. It's their new album. Anybody who knows me knows I love the beautiful Hives from Fagerstad, Sweden. And they're an amazing live band if you can ever check them out. And they don't really give you much in the way of diversity with their albums. It's pretty much, you can expect the same shit every time, but it's fantastic shit and I love it. And it's just rocking good tunes. So if you want to get, your ass blown off, 2.5 minutes at a time, 12 times in a row, pick it up. New album. That's it. That's my recommendation. Well, I mean, I don't know how much of a comeback it is. I know it's been a while since. I know it's been a while since Black and White, but I mean, I thought that was a great album. I know it probably didn't get as much attention too.
I think they put out a couple EPs in between.
Well, no, I mean, what it is like the first record broke and everyone loved it. And then everyone sort of turned their back on them on the last couple records. And now they're paying attention to them again. Whereas like there was nothing wrong with the material they've made between A and C.
It was amazing.
They didn't make a bad album in between. Tyrannosaurus Hives and Black and White.
It was the whole being on a major label thing. That people got turned off to, which I don't know why, but it was the same stuff. It was really good.
Yeah.
And funny enough, like that first album that came out was like a compilation album. It was kind of like a greatest hits of like three other, like, was it EPs or
favorite,
albums before
your new favorite band?
Yeah. Like when everyone kind of like realized, holy shit, these guys are awesome. That was kind of like a greatest hits, like put together.
That was like two albums, an EP, and a bunch of stray singles, right? Was that what that was?
Yeah, exactly. Because like the albums that they collected, one of them was called Vinny Vidi Vicious, which I think is just an amazing fucking name for a rock album. I think you have it pretty much a bang on, but. I mean, I saw them live at a festival, this is years back, not long after that, compilation was released. And they're just so fucking good. I mean, in a time when rock and roll music is just so, sterile, I mean, these guys proper, you know, go crazy. And, it's just nice to see. I mean, he's called Howlin' Pell Amfisk for a reason. Yeah. I mean, the dude screams his lungs out and it's not, fucking, you know, doom metal.
They played the NHL All-Star game when it was here.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
When they do that sort of thing, do they just get like three songs or something? And
I know they played it. I know they played at least two. I know they played two shows separately or something like that before and after the All-Star game, but they had a set. They actually played when the players came out, when they did the player announcements.
Okay. So that was fun.
Yeah. And I know they did a couple of shows in and afterwards. And I think they did a set. I think they did a pre TV set too. And of course, you know, it was really good.
Well, see, the fun thing is when they first came out and like they played like MTV Awards, but they played them on stage like at the same time with like the Strokes and and what was the band from Australia?
That was the thing with the MTV Awards where they had the split stage, and then they threw all these bands up all up at once, and it was kind of like the rotating thing.
Yeah, it was almost like the bands were playing a medley with each other.
Yeah,
it was really bizarre. But they just had this thing of they're part of this new movement of bands with the at the start of their titles. Like, and I was just like, this is the fucking best you can come up with as far as like, you know, critiquing. Yeah. It's like, oh, they all have the.
The coolest thing I remember about that was at the end of the Hive song, he basically told people to stop watching now. You can stop watching now. We're done.
Yeah. He's amazingly dickish on stage. He's the cockiest motherfucker alive. It's like, that's why I always call him the beautiful Hives from Fagerstad, Sweden, because that's how I remember he always used to introduce themselves. We are the beautiful Hives! And it's always like, I am the greatest thing in the world! Like, it would just be shit like that the whole time. It's like, yes, we have rocked your socks off, but now we're going to rock your shoes off too. Like, all just, like, you know, just ridiculous phrases. Like, and it's, yeah, it's they're just so much fun. So much fun. I wish there was more bands like them, but if there were, I don't think they'd be as good. But yeah, they haven't played Ireland in ages, and I'm hoping they play here soon as part of the tour of this. But I saw some footage of them online, and they still got it.
Yeah, the album was great.
So was it this week this past week on that it was released, or was I just not aware of it for a couple of weeks?
You know, it's been out in I know it's been out in the UK. It was out in the UK before we got it, because it was out like a month before we got it. And I know it came out. I know it came out. I think in I want to say May here, so it might have been out like a month earlier there.
Fuck, it's been out that long. Jesus, because it was kind of like in the new section in the record shop that I went to today.
Did you know record stores do that? They keep stuff that's been out for a while, but, you know, it's one of those
things. Yeah, they finally.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, like, even here with radio, they're finally, that record's finally getting a push now.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, it came out at a time when there's a lot of other records. I think it came out, the thing that killed it is it came out around the same time as the Jack White record. So like, literally all the, and oh, that was, and now everyone's kind of like, okay, look, pay attention to this.
I think it was the same week as Blunderbuss coming out.
Yeah.
It was like a week or two before, it was like around that week or two that Blunderbuss came out.
And funny enough, that was in the new record section as well in the store. Yeah.
Which is also quite good, but God.
Oh, well, that's it. No, that was just my recommendation. That was it, just that album. So that's all I got. So you can ding me, John, if you need to.
Well, why would I ding you?
Or don't, dickhead.
You don't have one.
Just, you don't,
just fucking, well, okay. $50 fucking. I'll give you $50 fucking
hold
dollars.
Hold on, here you go.
Dragon. Is that good enough for you?
There you go. I gave you.
Rocks, what could people do if Aaron has a... as a need for a ding, like could they do Help Me Rocks, or are we?
Yes, you could record your own ding for Aaron for the upcoming Help Me Rocks Dragon Con episode. They can call at 404-382-0769 or Need Coffee Live on Skype. Or if you want to travel over to the Unique Geek, there is a button where you could record a message there. So record a ding for Aaron. Go ahead.
80s.
Yes.
You got, and I have to congratulate you. You got through it without with getting the number like
the first time.
That was awesome. And it was
not the right number, but she got the number.
Nice.
Really?
It was the right number. Jeez.
Wow.
Asshole.
All right. So, who's next then?
I'll go.
Go, Rocks.
As I said earlier, John Scalzi got some really good airtime about his new book.
Yay.
Called, Red Shirt. I started reading this book on Sunday night, and I still have, I've been reading bits and pieces during our podcast.
nice.
Again, this is where things get done.
Yeah, basically, the premise is, it's on board a starship, and, you know, the away team, have the new members of the crew notice as red shirts that, their lives are kind of expendable. So they start comparing notes. I won't go further because I don't want to spoil this because it is really good. Scalzi has done his work on science fiction shows. He makes fun of pop culture. There's a really cool bit about Wikipedia even. So this is a good read. It's on the New York Times bestseller list for a geek kind of book. That's pretty cool. And I'm sure after Comic-Con, I'm sure there is going to be, you know, a movie about it. I'm sure of it.
So Rox, is this like a novel version of the Bitten Galaxy Quest where they're constantly like, we've got to get out of here before they kill Guy?
They played that skit on Talk of the Nation where Neil Conan was talking to John Scalzi, and they did play that. Nice. And yeah, pretty much. It's in the beginning. Okay, here's the thing. If you really want to know, and I posted this on, I think, Tor, but if you go to my Twitter feeds, you can find it somewhere. I posted that IO9 and Tor have the first four chapters that you could read online. And that'll sell you on that, you know, if you want to get this book. But I will say, you want to get this book. If you're a Star Trek fan or any other type of sci-fi series, and you kind of make fun of it, the whole premise of what a red shirt is, then you got to get this book. Because this is really good.
And the audiobook, if I remember correctly, is read by Will Wheaton. So,
Yes, it is. Also, you can still pick up, I believe, I'm going to mention a magazine, Juxtapose, which is the pop culture art magazine. The July issue is a full issue about our favorite channel, Adult Swim. There's interviews for Children's Hospital, Aqua Teen something or another now is what they call it. Of course, the Venture Brothers, the really cool artwork and called what, Black Dynamite. Has anyone seen that? It's based on black exploitation. The artwork is really cool. To me, it reminds me of like an adult version artwork style, especially with the bell bottom pants of like Fat Albert. If Fat Albert used more black, you know, heavy outlines and stuff, that's what it reminds me of. And my favorite, which is Squidbillies. I love that show. That's back again. The cool thing is the magazine has a lot of artwork in it. They also do like a quick tour of William Street Studios. You know, some of the little sketches and stuff. I didn't know that. The one show I really kind of miss out on is Children's Hospital, and like Henry Winkler's in this one. So pick up the Juxtaposed July issue because it's all about, you know, Adult Swim, which includes like robot, all of the shows. And they even do like a little blip about the shows that haven't really made it. You know, like Saul of the Mole Men and stuff, you know, the short-lived shows. So I'm done.
All right, cool. Who's next? Go, Tuffley!
You get Scott this month.
Is Tuffley still there? We may have lost Tuffley momentarily. All right.
There
you are.
Again.
There you are. Hi, welcome back.
Sorry, hi. So I think it's been a running theme about the catching up on records. I will go with the Walkman's Heaven, which I for some reason I missed the first time it was out. When it came out, I think it back in May when it came out, May or April, I think when it came out, but totally missed it. It's a really good record from the Walkman. It's called Heaven. I will also recommend a comic. You remember those? A comic. It's called The Lookouts or Lookouts. It's basically kind of a combination of it's from the guys who do Penny Arcade.
Oh.
And it's kind of a mashup of what appears to be a Boy Scout troop operating in a world that is slightly like Dungeons and Dragons. And it's exactly what you think it is. They've been running little shorts of these characters on the Penny Arcade site if you want to get a taste for what they're doing. And the miniseries just came out. The first issue just came out a couple of weeks ago. And the nice thing is, if you don't want to trek to a comic shop to get it, you can also get it on the Comixology app. And they're doing it for 99 cents at the moment for the first issue, which is awesome. And I think the second issue comes out in September. So, check that out. And that'll be it for me.
Cool. Thank you, Tuffley. All right, Rob, what you got?
Well, first, I believe, and I could be wrong on this, but, I would like to encourage everyone to like the new Unique Geek Facebook page, if John has not mentioned that yet.
I haven't, but thank you very much. Yes. But before you do that,
I said new is like I was like, well, I didn't know. I what I don't know is, did you have an old one and you took it down, or is this just you just launched it?
It's just launched it. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, you can like the All Things Unique Geek on Facebook, and then you can find through that portal. You can find all the Help Me Rocks and all the other mayhem and all the Dragon Con interviews and all the wacky shenanigans going on over there as well. So I did want to recommend that, just in case John was too nice to bring up his own thing. But I do want to recommend the other movie I saw this week that was really great, and I'm biased because Michelle Williams is in it, but it's called Take This Waltz, and it's really good. And Seth Rogen, who would know that guy could seriously act? So I do recommend that. It's sort of an indie film making the rounds right now with Michelle Williams and Seth Rogen, and it's actually pretty funny. So I want to recommend that. And a couple of different things. I do want to recommend, because she was 90, we'll talk about this probably on the soundboard, Kitty Wells died. She was 92. And everyone thinks that Loretta Lynn was kind of like the founder of like women country music. But basically, Kitty Wells is the female version of Hank Williams in terms of the lexicon of American country music. And if you've heard her, you just don't realize it because she did that Your Cheatin' Heart, which has like been played in like every commercial ever made, and which they never asked her if they could license or use the song for any of the commercials. So last year, just as she needed to go into nursing home care, she got a big fucking fat fucking check for royalties, which is kind of nice, but also kind of scary at the same time. But if you've never listened to Kitty Wells, you don't necessarily have to like country to like her. If you like Dolly Parton or if you like sort of female singer Americana stuff, you would love her. So she's kind of an iconic country singer, but she's also really interesting and fun and sort of pushed the bounds for getting women in music. She basically would do, there'd be shows where if she'd play in a club and it was an all-male club, they'd book her as Kit Wells, and then she'd come on stage, and that's how she'd get in, and then it didn't really matter. So it's kind of lots of interesting things like that. The other record I want to recommend is Kishibashi, 151A. This kind of sprung up on me. He is in Of Montreal, and it's got this sort of combination of like pop and strings going on that's really good. I mean, it's sort of like got like everything that you like in a Tori Amos record without Tori Amos singing, with like a really great sort of orchestrated pop sound, and it's kind of Beach Boyish in its popness, or Sufjan Stevens kind of, but it's really good. So I want to recommend that. If you like things a little grungier, I do want to recommend the. I I think they're pronounced Div, but it's D-I-I-V, and the album's called Ocean. It sounds very much like a cross between Godspeed You Black Emperor and My Bloody Valentine.
And then it's very nice, by the way.
Yeah, it's really good. And then there is I was really excited. There's a brand new record out by The Very Best, which I think Wid should check out, because it's sort of like they take everything that Peter Gabriel did with WOMAD and sort of run it through the MIA blender. And
it's DJ's African music.
Yeah, it's kind of like a Damon Albarn African music project without Damon Albarn and the pretentiousness. It's kind of like a cross between Fela Kuti and WOMAD. Would that be safe to say, Cuffley?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, they're called The Very Best, and it's really, really fun. So I recommend that. And then
tagging in Spotify right now.
Yeah, and then and then the Dirty Projectors' new record, Fling Low Magellan, which I completely love because of the album title, but it's much better than I expected it to be, because I've always kind of been hit or miss with them. But this one, I sort of get the idea of like a full beginning, middle, end record project from start to middle to end. So I want to recommend that. And then lastly, on TV, I do want to recommend a show I've gotten completely hooked on called Longmire with Robert Taylor, who's this great like Australian character actors in it. Lou Diamond Phillips. Who would have thought Lou Diamond Phillips could be this entertaining in television? And then Katie Sackhoff. And it's basically a sheriff in Wyoming has to like solve all kinds of crazy shit. So
now, see, from the commercials, I just thought that was somebody doing Justified again.
Yeah, a little bit, but there's parts of it where it's a little deeper. I mean, yeah, I mean, it's a little more crimey than Justified. But it's a little more noirish, you know. I think than Justified, but and even if it's a knockoff of Justified, it's still better than
Half Baked. It's still pretty good. I kept seeing the commercials for that and I'm going, wait, is Justified back yet?
It's kind of like, it'll soothe if you have the giant cut lacerations from Justified. This is the band-aid you'd put on it to make it feel better.
You really have to get into it. It's a really good show, I thought.
And what I really like about it is that the way they're bringing in sort of like plot points, kind of, like, oh, I didn't see that. Wait a minute, what's going on? Oh, wait, we don't know this. Okay. So they're bringing in sort of plot points in a very interesting way. And I think my big hook for it has been the acting. It's Peter Weller was just on one, and he stole it. He was great. He directed and he starred in it and as a guest star. And he was great in it. So it's been pretty solid, and it's kind of an interesting little premise. So, but I'm only about halfway through Justified. So, like, watching this made me go watch Justified. So I'm doing it back assholes.
Yeah.
But the acting is really good on it. And, you know, Robert Taylor's always been the sort of interesting character actor. And it's just good to see. Sometimes it's good to see these guys that have always just done, like, great work just get some kind of reward, you know, just for doing lots of cool shit. And this is kind of one of those instances. So I do want to recommend that.
Rob, just out of curiosity, so basically, Peter Weller was pulling a Tim Matheson, by directing it. Okay, yeah, because like Tim Matheson is like one of my favorite things about Burn Notice is when he just shows up and completely steals the show from everyone, including Bruce Campbell.
Another show I've gotten addicted to lately, but we'll get to that later. Okay. And lastly, with the Viacom DirecTV dispute, millions of people don't have MTV across the country, and their ratings have never been better. I'm done.
I was about to say, did anyone notice?
No. Here's what you do, Rob, because I had noticed that the Daily Show Twitter feed is actually making up what is supposedly going on other Viacom networks. I keep waiting for them to pop up and say MTV is showing music videos.
No. Okay, Tuffley, there's crazy and then there's crazy, okay?
Yeah, that's outlandish.
Seriously. I mean, I would expect Serve to say something like that, to be perfectly honest.
But yeah, the Daily Show Twitter feed has been doing this entertaining little recap of what you're missing on the Viacom networks right now. So nice. That's fun to check out while the blackout's going on. Oh, and by the way, you can watch Daily Show and Colbert on the websites, so it's fine.
Cool.
Just it before Walking Dead comes on. Damn it. Sorry.
There's other ways to get Walking Dead. thank you, Rob. All right, John, what you got?
You can get Walking Dead by clearing your throat?
Yes. Yes, you can. In fact, an episode just fell out of my nose. It was amazing.
Wow.
Yeah, somewhere in the middle of his throat clearing, didn't you hear a Carl get in the house? No, never mind.
The thing is, if what something Widge cleared out of his nose was as horrifying as some of the issues of what The Walking Dead, that would be a feat indeed.
Yeah, well, I haven't gotten to my recommendation yet. John, what you got?
Actually, as we discussed at the very beginning of this podcast, I'm kind of fascinated with this rock sugar band. I looked on Amazon, and of course they cannot sell their CD on Amazon. And I did some research. Well, actually, it is available. It was available briefly. There, you can buy it new for $100 if you wish. But apparently somebody got upset with one of the remixes or not remix, not actually remix. What's the term?
Samples?
Mashup.
The mashups that they do. And, they're working on some legal issues and trying to get the CD, released again.
So aren't they selling it on Bandcamp or something?
Actually it does. They're not selling it at all right now.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Well, I need to hear this.
Yeah, I think you do. It's as we discussed at the very beginning of the podcast, the lead singer is actually the guy who did the voice of Wacko from the Animaniacs, as well as does the voiceovers for America's Funniest Home Videos, a billion other things, right? But they do 80s style rock and mash it up with pop songs and they like take two songs, for example, what was one of them? What the heck is that Journey song that was on Glee forever?
Midnight Train.
Don't Stop Believing.
Don't Stop Believing. Oh, yeah. And they mashed it up with Metallica's Inner Sandman. And they play it live. And the videos,
like you do.
Yeah, the videos are on YouTube. You can look them up, Rock Sugar on YouTube, and you'll see the videos. And they, you know, they're actually very 80s. It's very cool. It's very retro, you know. Tuffley, as we know, is much into the 80s hair bands, so he would probably like it a whole lot.
Because if I go to this and it's the freecredit.com band, I will hunt you down.
I do not believe it is, no. It is possible, okay. But I don't think so. So I would do that. The other thing is that since you have to wait to buy that, maybe take the $15 you would have bought to buy Reimaginator, which is the name of their CD, invested in a little Kickstarter program that happens to be going on right now over at Kickstarter for things that somebody on this podcast does.
Oh, thanks, John. I hadn't actually really planned on promoting it that much, but if you'd like to support me getting to Dragon Con and I'd like to give me some money, you can go over to my Kickstarter page and donate. Thanks very much.
Now, Aaron, you told me that you had a Kickstarter that you were doing because you were coming up with your own version of a fleshlight.
Yes. Where I basically just, I come to your house with an actual torch.
Made out of actual flesh.
To be fair, that is a different kind of zombie in your treehouse.
Whoa.
Now, I think, and Rox may want to back me up on this, that by you putting that on Kickstarter, that technically makes you a hobo.
Yeah.
I think it makes him a hipster douchebag, doesn't it?
I think, Rob, were you talking about Aaron or myself? Which one's Aaron. The hobo? Oh, yeah, see?
Well, yeah. If you're like basically saying, hey, I need money for travel, that's one of the, not the complete thing you need to be hobo.
Does it not make me a hitcher more? Is it close to more hitcher, maybe?
Okay, you are so removed from Rutger Hauer, it's not even funny, so don't even go there.
Is that before or after a prostitute? Oh, never mind.
Whoa.
I would suggest that. But once Reimaginator is – by the way, if you don't know what I'm talking about, head over to needcoffee.com, and it's there. this guy that we know wrote a book.
Oh, he's going to recommend that in a second, so don't worry about it.
Oh, okay. So yeah, he should go ahead and recommend that book.
The more explicit plug is coming soon.
He's written several books. But this specific one has some.
I think that plug was somehow inserted into the front of the podcast.
Oh. Unless I'm not mistaken, that was a sexual reference.
Wow, it's like we never left.
This episode was brought to you by Fleshlight.
Now Scott, with more flesh. Upset.
Yes, with even more flesh.
If I was to buy the Reimaginator CD, you know, you could always get Steel Panther if you want some sort of, you know, crappy version of it. Actually, Steel Panther isn't bad. I like them. They're fun.
Steel Panther sounds like a horrible knockoff of Tiger Bomb.
Actually, that sounds like the film that drunken Sam Waterston technique would be in. I'm serious. Raza, get on that.
Although, can I say that the Man with the Iron Fists looks absolutely fucking badass?
Oh yeah, it does. It does.
I was disappointed when I saw the title. I was like, I was hoping against hope that there might be an Iron Fist movie that I just didn't know about.
But, you and everyone else. I'm just like, oh, come on. Be happy with what you've got. Damn.
Funny enough, I could see that, though. I could see the Raza doing an Iron Fist film.
Yeah, no, you can. I mean, basically, it's just like, come on. You got Russell Crowe with guns fighting Lucy Liu with, like, razor-sharp fans before you even bring in, you know, Raza and Iron Fists. I'm like, okay, will nothing satisfy you fucking people? Because that to me looks like somebody just went into my id and went, hey, here's something we haven't done in a while. Let's do this.
Is Liam Neeson in it?
For all I know, yes. But if he was too busy making Taken 2, then he gets a pass. I don't fucking care. As long as it's a Taken movie, I don't fucking care. Don't care. Or if
part of Batman where you could insert the Taken speech, it's hilarious.
If he was too busy cashing his battleship check, that would be fine too. At this point, Neeson gets a pass. So, but anyway, so recommendations. Yes, for myself. Was that John? Was that you?
Oh,
you...
I just didn't know where to go to buy any of this stuff. Is pretty much what.
I'm glad you mentioned that. Not that you didn't know, but I'm glad you set me back on course because you know I'm so completely scattered. That's why everyone on the staff has a taser. And not just Scott.
No. So
what? No, I'm not asking for it. I'm just saying. Anyway, no. So, yes, the place where you could go to buy all of this stuff, including the stuff that I'm about to talk about, with the exception of a couple things, is Amazon.com. And the way you get there, you're going to buy it from Amazon.com anyway, because Amazon sells freaking everything. Okay. We all buy from it. It's okay. It's not that big of a deal. If you want to buy locally, that's fine too. But I mean, you know, you must be made of money. So adopt me. But most people who are trying to save money buy from Amazon, and you can go to needcoffee.com/Amazon and buy stuff that way that you were going to buy anyway.
There's lots of local independent businesses on Amazon.
There you go. Amazon is a fulfillment center for all kinds of things. So well put, Rob. But yes, you could go to needcoffee.com/Amazon, and by using that link, anything that you buy, we get kickbacks for. Whether it's somebody bought a gaming console recently, thank you so much, or MP3s, it doesn't matter. We get quantity as well as quantity of numbers of things bought, as well as quantity of dollars spent, both count towards helping us out. So thank you so much for doing that. A lot of you do it. I can see it coming in, and it is extremely helpful. Thank you.
Did you ever figure out if you get anything from Prime signups?
I don't think you do.
Okay.
But I mean, part of the thing would be if you do sign up for Prime, which check the numbers, because it made sense in our case, and we've been on Prime for like 3 years, and it's a fucking lifesaver. But if you do sign up, then you're more likely to buy stuff through Amazon, which means you're more likely to hopefully use needcoffee.com/Amazon. So anyway, we win. And for the record, Anyone, if you find a place where you can get something cheaper than Amazon, for fuck's sake, buy it at the cheap place. I would much rather you saved money than gave us money, because that's the way I love you. So, and I know most everyone here at least feels strongly about you the same way. Now, my specific recommendations.
I really don't like him, Widge.
Well, but that's how you show love. Is that you don't like people. Yeah.
Your first recommendation. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I know. I've seen the pictures. So
it's a really good thing Scott's not on this episode.
He's not?
No.
You know what's Rob? I can't.
Flashlights. I thought we were.
I can't even tell if you're kidding. But that's for the best. So.
See, it's sarcasm. You can never tell it. See,
I know I can't because with Rob, it's like breathing, so I never know. Couple things. First, something that I don't believe you can get on Amazon, but it's worth checking out.
Amazon.
A friend of Need Coffee, David Gallagher, and his partner, Mr. Ellis, have put out a comic book that they funded through Kickstarter called The Only Living Boy. And it's kind of a comic that's an infused fantasy. You could see like a bit of 80s crazy television, animated television in it, toys in it as well. Simply, I do want to do a truncated interview with Mr. Geller and ask him about this because he is a toy fucking fanatic. But basically this kid falls asleep and wakes up in an alternate reality in which there's all manner of creatures running around. The world looks like it's something out of Thundar the Barbarian on acid. And there's a giant fucking awesome dragon that's like hanging out on the Empire State Building. And it's really actually quite cool. So these are the folks who did High Moon. It's really, I've read the first issue and it's available on Comixology, I know, as well as other places. And it's a hoot. So I do recommend that. Also, still in the comic book arena, I don't know that I recommend Walking Dead number 100. I don't know that I recommend the Walking Dead comic. And the reason I say that is because Kirkman is a fucking lunatic. And I'm 100. I have been with this. I've read this comic longer than most things, comics I've ever read. I mean, in a row. I haven't missed an issue. And I can say that I still don't know what the fuck he's doing. He is out of fucking control. He is a brutal son of a bitch. And I want to punch him and then buy him a beer because he is just, wherever you think he's going, he will fuck you up. I swear to God, because issue 100 is completely and utterly brutal.
I just think he's doing that in two completely different universes with the same characters.
Yeah, but I mean, there's stuff.
Well, three, he's doing the books too.
Well, yeah, which I've not read the book, but I'm sure they're pretty harsh, but. There are things that he is simply not going to be able to do on television that he does in the comic book. And bearing in mind that we've watched two small children get shot in the head on television in the same series in different seasons. And yet I'm saying, yes, he goes far beyond that. And and then
I would be afraid of what his nightmares might be like.
Holy
shit. Wait, Jane Plato made a new movie?
What?
Nothing.
Did you say Plato made a new movie?
No, Dana Plato made a new movie. Never mind.
Oh, wow. Wow. I'm not going to say it's too soon, but wow. Anyway, Aaron, so you were saying that he is a frightening...
Oh, no, just if this is the stuff he comes up with for work, I just can't imagine what frightens him. You know what I mean? Like what freaks him out? Like what kind of nightmares he has where he wakes up in a cold sweat? Like I can't imagine the insanity.
It's like Teletubbies or probably something like that where he just wakes up screaming. I mean, it's completely...
I think he sleeps well at night.
He probably is.
Like me. I sleep well at night. Money.
Oh my God.
You sleep on a bed of money though. You sleep on a bed made from the skin of your enemies. There's quite a difference.
In a floating Zeppelin.
Yes.
But I do buy good sheets.
Well, there you go.
I'm going to need a 600 thread count, motherfuckers.
That's right.
So there's my sort of kind of recommendation of Walking Dead 100. Cause holy fuck. And this is me saying, holy fuck. So that should tell you something. So, yes, I'd also like to recommend a DVD that just came out this week. It is the new Cinematic Titanic Live DVD for Rattlers. And I will say that I just got it in, so I have not watched it. Not to pull a Scott, but I've seen their other stuff, and I saw them live twice, and they are cinematic Titanic. So I can pretty much say with a great deal of authority that their shit's going to be funny. And they're our buddies, so you should go support them because the shit's funny. When I look, it looked like they're selling that through Amazon. I don't know if they're moving to that for fulfillment and getting away from their own shop or what, but that's what their store said. So,
Instant Video too. Can you get that on Instant Video?
I haven't seen it on Amazon yet. It may be.
Or is it just DVD only?
It's just DVD at the moment. That's what okay. I saw. Something may have changed because the shit changes on Amazon all the time. But a couple days ago, I saw that it was just a DVD. So, I'm sure they'll move to Amazon Instant because they're smart people. So I would recommend that. And last but not least, yes, what John alluded to is true. Those of you may be aware that I co-wrote with Ken Plume a morbid little children's book called There's a Zombie in My Treehouse that Len Peralta then turned around and illustrated. And we put it out as a good night, Aaron. We did. People just don't say bye. It's like. So it's so funny. People will jump in on anything having to do with Doctor Who or geekdom or whatever else, but they won't say bye. How weird is that? What was I saying? Yes.
Sorry.
So we did the book. We had it published. We got a write up in Wired. It was all very cool. But with the advent of Kickstarter. Landon, Ken, and I were kicking around an idea of trying to get the original book transferred to an iBook for the iPad, which is kind of cool in that one of my favorite things, of course, is audiobooks. And we're getting some great people on tap to read their own versions of There's a Zombie in My Treehouse, including John Hodgman and Jonathan Colton, Doc and Jackson from the Venture Brothers, folks like that. Some of the guys from MST3K, including Bill Corbett and Kevin Murphy and Trace Ballou, they're all going to be doing their versions. So it's going to be a really sweet iBook. We just have to get that funded. And we have as a stretch goal, which is the secondary goal, to fund a sequel that we have in mind called Conquest of the Snowman, which is a new Johnny Fry adventure. And the cool thing about this is we have a special reader on board to read that book, if we can get it written, which is Neil Gaiman. So I know. So the concept of Neil Gaiman reading words that I had a part in putting together is pretty fucking sweet, can I just say?
If you don't make your stretch goal just to fulfill your fantasy, will you go take out a second mortgage on your house?
You mean a third mortgage? So the best place to find that, go to johnnyfry.com. JohnnyFry.com, and that will redirect you directly to the Kickstarter. We put together a video that basically outlines what we're doing. You can see that we've got some premiums on there, some really cool stuff, including iBooks. And the way it works is, if you buy, if you basically pledge for a premium level that gets you, say, a free iBook, then if the stretch goal happens, you automatically get the iBook or the second book thrown in. If you pledge, for a book of the first book, if we get the second book funded, we automatically throw in the second book on the premium level. You don't have to do anything. So if you pledge, then it's automatically in your best interest to get other people to pledge, because then we get closer to our ultimate goal and you get more stuff. Even if you can't pledge, share it with your followers, wherever, whatever social network you're on. Because I, for various and sundry reasons would love to see this happen. Not just because of getting the iBook done, which is actually a cool prospect. We got a company on board to put it together for us. And that's part of what the money's for. And taxes, let me tell you. But we got to pay for the iBook to be created. But the concept of writing a sequel that then Neil Gaiman can turn around and read for us is pretty fucking awesome. And getting everybody else to read the book we already have. I mean, that's fucking incredible too. Having heard some of the versions that we've already got in the can, it's pretty amazing. So yes, johnnyfry.com is where you can go and support that. And I thank you in advance for doing that.
And can I say one other thing about that?
Please.
Although I must admit I haven't pledged yet, though I am going to. 10, seriously, you know, $10. Kick him $10. You know, it's not that much. It's two coffees, for crying out loud.
Well, thank you, John. I think, personally, I'm of the mind that if 1% of Neil Gaiman's following on Twitter were to give us a dollar, basically just do the absolute, we don't actually want anything, here's a dollar level, then we would, I mean, well, first of all, we could buy an Eastern European nation, first of all. But, and then we could give it to Rocks, and it would be Spazhausia. And yeah. Actually, no, it would be Spazhaus. It would be H-E-U-S.
Yes,
we would just call it that. And we could throw an entire party there. But
National Anthem by Devo.
Wow. yeah, we could probably afford that too, given Neil Gaiman's got 1.7 million followers. So, but yes, we got a few weeks to go on it. So, but any help is appreciated. $10, a dollar, whatever. It all helps. So, that plug done. I think we have reached the end of another marathon session. Very provocative.
That's what she said. Oh, wait.
Yes. And she meant actually, fucking while running 26 miles. Yes. So,
with a
which
plug.
I'm sure exists as a race somewhere.
With a plug.
With a plug?
Yes.
It's a fucking race.
That would be a long drop cord, let me just say. I don't even know how you do that. And that's, you know what? That's a fire hazard. So what you'd have to do is you'd have to, like, every mile or so, reel it in and plug it in somewhere else. And I am not talking about the penis. I am still talking about the drop cord. So,
but I do need 27 inches.
Oh, Jesus Christ. So I think it is time yet again on another episode of Weekend Justice. When in closing, we should all say Sorkin.
Sorkin.
Hold on.
Hang on. Look that up on the internet.
Wait. Sorkin. That was me walking down the hallway while I said it.
Oh.
That was my Foley work for the evening. Thank you, folks.
That was your Foley work?
Yes.
Because that's your actual Foley work.
Yes.
Okay, good.
Yeah. It's late.
Aaron's going to be so upset because he missed the chance to say Sorkin again.
I know. Oh, well.
He says it in private.
Hey, wait,
in his sleep.
Okay, never mind.
That's a chant. That's a chant. If you summon
Sorkin.
If you say it three times in a mirror, you get an episode of Studio 60. It's true.
So what you're saying, Tuffley, is that not a lot of people have done this.
Exactly.
Or wait, do you mean that you actually get served a rerun of Studio 60 in your mirror?
It could work either way. I haven't tried it.
That's probably for the best.
I've heard
you don't want to, because if you do it in the morning, you'll be late for work because you'll be required to watch it.
you can't leave the room, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Nice. Although if you did say it, the way it would be cool is if you basically said it three times in a mirror and you got an episode of Studio 60, but it starred Tony Todd. Now that would be worthwhile just to see how that would shake out, but yeah. Give me just a minute while I clarify.
Hi there. Many of you know me as the half-assed engineer John on Need Coffee's Weekend Justice podcast. But what most of you don't know is that before I was internationally known by tens of people, I was a patient at the Sleep Deprivation Institute, known as NeedCoffee.com. NeedCoffee.com has provided me and many of you with hundreds of hours of therapy through engaging rants, dreamcasts, reviews, contests, news of the offbeat and cool, and of course, more information about caffeine than was really necessary. Why, without Need Coffee, I might have actually seen Starship Troopers 4 bugging out. Thank you, Need Coffee, for saving me from that fate. Now, all this goodness does come at a cost, so the fine folks at Need Coffee are asking for your help. Please head over to needcoffee.com/memberships to learn what you can do to keep this invaluable resource alive. Your contribution not only will allow for more great content and more chances to win free shit, but it might just save a kitten. So as you sit there, listening to this podcast, this free podcast, sipping on your $8 Café de Froufrou, think about what you could have done with that money instead. Sure, you could have donated to some worthy cause, or you could keep Need Coffee and kittens alive. Your choice. Visit needcoffee.com/memberships for more details. Oh, crap. Did I record that?
And here's Dakota.
That's good.
Yeah, it only took me 3 hours to get a good one in, but so be it.
Hey.
That is awesome.
Well done.
Well done.
Golf clap.
Thank you. Oh, is that a Caddyshack callback? Well done.
Yes, it is.
Jesus.